back to another FACT podcast. I'm Dr. Fred Clary, founder of Functional Analysis Chiropractic Technique, a chiropractic technique based on movement and breathing. Well, on tonight's episode, we have a special treat. We have Dr. Michael Christopher. He's a Buffalo area chiropractor who practices all around wellness, a good friend of mine. And in this interview, we get into natural childbirth, alternative healthcare in the United States and specifically New York. And we get into the politics of this pandemic and successful living in life. A lot of subjects to cover. Let's dive into this long episode. Recording. Today we have Dr. Michael Christopher on the FACT podcast. He's a lifelong friend and a chiropractic practitioner near Buffalo, New York. And in today's podcast, we're going to do some interviews on, you know, the state of chiropractic in New York and compare it and contrast it to Minnesota. We'll talk about where alternative healthcare is in the nation, philosophies, and hopefully for our listeners, get some takeaways, how they can keep themselves healthy and have a vital, passionate life. Welcome to the podcast, Doc.
Thanks for having me, Fred. Appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. So before we started recording, you were saying something about how we met. Why don't you just go ahead and tell the listeners, give them a little bit of color and flavor.
Absolutely. It started out, you know, I went to chiropractic college just kind of like a regular guy. So I ran, I cycled, and I did some weight training. And I saw this giant human being walking around in the hallways, and people made reference to, like, that's Fred. That's Fred. I'm like, yeah, cool. What's with the bag? He had a duffel bag that I think was a hockey bag. Everyone else had like a book bag or, you know, a simple backpack full of their books, the normal thing. Fred's bag had DMSO, is 2 gallons of water. And the rumor was he had a full cadaver in there that was preserved in a case, you know, in case you needed a quick reference to something in dissection, you just pull it out of the bag for you. And we go over some of the parts. So I knew Fred was a bit of a spectacle. I didn't know about his history in weight training and the world records and all that stuff. I just knew this giant human being that was loud and aggressive was roaming the halls. And I was like, wow, what the heck is that? And then I realized he's from, you know, from the East Coast. And so am I. So, you know, we had sort of alignment of attitude. But I'm in the weight room one time doing the leg extension and flexion machine, which, you know, if you're really into weight training, you realize it's a silly device.
Yep.
And Fred, in some thundering voice, said, "You getting any results out of that thing?" And I'm like, you know, no, it actually, it burns a little bit and I don't feel anything the next day. And I feel like I'm killing myself. He goes, "Why don't you join me in the squat rack?" And I said, sure. So I'd never done an actual squat in a squat rack with a bar on my back. Fred had been doing that since he was an infant. And so he loads me up and I'm going up and down and thinking, it's pretty hard. And then it was his turn and we put on, you know, thousands of pounds of donuts on there and we started doing it. And then he wanted to work biceps. And I'm like, well, my biceps are already toast from loading the plates on for you. And he's screaming and all this. And I got introduced for the first time in my life to what it was like to really be a crazed, dedicated athlete. You know, I was a novice athlete. I was pretty good, right? Yeah. Not a big trophy case. You know, not that crazed of a guy, you know. But I learned from Fred how to be focused, what it meant to give your all. And I had trouble walking the next day. I think I took the elevator. We had a school with 2 floors, and I think I couldn't make it up the stairs. You had seen me, and then you said, you're not doing too good. I'm like, yeah. I think you assumed I was in an accident. You didn't realize it was our weight training routine that you put me through. But I loved it. You know, within a couple months, I needed new pants. Yeah. And I learned what it was like to put on muscle and what it felt like. You know, forget the show. It was empowering emotionally and physically to have a body that was being built, because the hormones and the chemistry that go with that, anyone out there listening that really trains knows how you change hormonally, emotionally, confidence-wise when you start to have that racing through your body versus that stagnant physiology of, you know, average food and average activity. And of course, since then, I've studied the hunter-gatherer and sort of primal living, Mark Sethon's work, Primal Blueprint, which I really love. And going back in anthropological studies and say, okay, we've been here, you hear different times how long, you know, I have Christian friends that feel like we've been here 6,000 years. Then I have, you know, people that are more into anthropology say it's 165,000 years. whatever it is, it's a long time, a lot of adaption, a lot of stimuli, viral infections to upgrade us, all kinds of things going on. But you look at that lifestyle and they estimate that we move 12 hours a day and that we have the strength and agility of an Olympic athlete. And I always tell my patients, you know, you're working out this amount, realize what your body really is capable of. Because if you had a sharp stick and a saber-toothed tiger, you better be fast, strong, smart, work as a group.
Accurate.
Mental activity, right?
Or accurate.
And accurate, or your food, right? So that's how we were brought on this earth. And we still are left with this shell that longs for that. But we really haven't got it together, in my opinion, as to what the body really needs to be put through to be truly healthy.
Wow. That, you know? I mean, you just did the summary for the whole podcast, so I appreciate that in front of it. So people can turn it off now if you don't want to unpack it. So, but I'm going to unpack it a little bit. Mike, tell me, why don't you just give the listeners your bio? We did go to school together. I think they figured that out. But, you know, where you practice in New York, your philosophy. Sure. You've been doing it like 3 decades. What's an average day look like for you in the office? That kind of thing.
Sure. I got into chiropractic because I had migraines. I never experienced significant low back pain in my life. Even to this day, I think I've had 3 episodes of significant, like, can't sleep, moaning back pain. And I deserved it. You know, things ended up crazy. It's really not in the gene pool. My dad was 300 pounds, never had back pain.
Wow.
But migraines run on my mother's side. My father got migraines from jumping out of an airplane and his parachute didn't open. He opened his reserve, got caught in, and he hit the ground at 40 miles an hour. So he had, you know, multiple things wrong with his brain that he loved to tease everybody about. But, you know, so he had migraines too. So it was a family of migraines. My aunt, really Italian, aggressive, really cool aunt, said, "You're going to the chiropractor." I'm like, okay. So she took me and my headaches went from unlivable, unspeakable. I gave up on them. I just, you know, from ever since I can remember to when I was 18, when my aunt took me, I just had headaches. I stopped talking about them by the time I was 13, because as a 13-year-old boy, you don't want to be a whiner. I was raised with Clint Eastwood, you know, you have to cry all the time. Mm-hmm. So I just toughed them out, squinted a lot, couldn't take the sun, threw up once in a while. Hey, this is it. A neurologist told me I was cursed. I'm like, wow.
The most he educated. Said you were cursed?
He said I was actually cursed because it comes from both sides.
Okay.
I'm like, excuse me, sir, my father
jumped out of an airplane. That was traumatic.
My father jumped out of an airplane and cracked his head wide open. That explains his migraines. My mother's hormonal. I'm not really hormonal from what I can tell. You know, well,
yeah, I don't own ovaries, so you
exactly.
know.
So there was a lot of different conversations, and I thought the most educated and intelligent man I might be standing in front of in my life at that point, I think I was 12, said that I was cursed. And I got in the car and I was kind of a quiet kid. And I said to my mom, "Do we need to go to get Eye of Newt?" little did I know that was the direction of my education, right? It was more Eye of Newt than it was cynical genius who tells people they're cursed. And I thought, well, that's not going to be any help. So I guess I just quit. Right. So, but then fast forward 18, aunt takes me. Guy rips and tears around at my neck in a way that I really had no understanding what chiropractic was. And I walked out of his house to practice in his house. And I thought, I need a lot of that. However scary and weird that was, something about it was right. And I just kept going. Headaches started to diminish down to something really insignificant. I said, I want to be a chiropractor. He had a big smile, patted me on the back. He had 4 daughters. One was a chiropractor, one's becoming a chiropractor.
Wow.
So I sat with them, give me an update. Off I went. And that was pretty much my journey into it. So my focus has always been on migraines and headaches. But as you know, Fred, he is an athlete practice and works with crippled children and all kinds of stuff, which is amazing. My practice, I've aligned myself with Dent Neurology here in Buffalo. It's a major freestanding neurological institute. And I do a series of different techniques to really work the base of the neck to get the greater occipital nerve and the mechanics and the cerebrospinal fluid to flow a little better. Work a lot of pediatric migraines, have a lot of teenage girls that are on the phone, 24/7, especially since the quarantine, and heavily medicated, not going to bed on time. So I got to, you know, try to correct their personal behaviors. And I jokingly say, I need you to go to bed at 9 p.m. and get up at 5 a.m. And they just feel like I'm insane. I do it just to shock them. They're like, then look at their parent like, that doesn't work, you know. But, you know, at least embossing them that you're going to bed way too late.
Okay.
You know, you might have seen the research where you're supposed to go to bed at 9, get up at 5, and you align with the sun, and you get more powerful. And
I can attest that that works.
Yeah,
I can't always do it. Obviously, that's pretty inconvenient when I have teenage daughters running around and the house is always thumping and grinding around.
Wait, how many teenage daughters do you have?
Well, now I should update myself. I have a 24-year-old, a 21-year-old, and a 16-year-old.
Oh, you only got three.
Yeah, I've seen your
pictures. I got four there right there I'm looking at.
They're beautiful, man. I love seeing your Facebook posts and your daughters. They pose well. They look so good next to you, right? And I hate that. Don't take this the wrong way, but you know, it's kind of Beauty and the Beast.
It is.
You know?
Oh, it is.
You're standing there all beautiful, and you're like, you know.
And you're a pushover just like I am, too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. It's brutal.
I need this. Why do you need this $70 piece of makeup? And then they bat their eye and you're done. How did the credit card get into my hand?
Yeah. Two times I went down on all fours in the hallway tripping over shoes.
Oh, my
God. I try to navigate the hallway. You know, it's kind of dark. You miss the light switch. We have a hallway and then the laundry area. So I'm going back to get something and I just go down. Right. So now I just slide my feet to knock the shoes out of the way.
Oh,
I bet you I got 10 grand in shoes.
Oh, we're pretty close. I should show you all the shoes on the way into the house. They don't even try to get them up to their room now. They just leave them because it's Minnesota and we always have snow. So they don't want to wreck their shoes. So there's a pile. You can't get into the house.
Yeah.
So I got rid of the Sentry home alarm. Don't need that anymore. Anybody breaks in, the shoes are going to take them out.
A nice trap. Thieves don't think about high stepping, you know.
Yeah. Coming in. No, they don't. They creep, and I'm like, they're going down.
No, they're going.
They're going down, painful. Especially, you know, I got all styles. The one kid likes the big combat boots, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, sure. kind of the punky style we used to grow up with, alternative, all that, which is great. I love seeing that back, but you hit that damn thing with a naked toe at 2 a.m, man, that hurts.
Yeah, it's an impaling. Yeah. You're limping for a few days with that
one. Oh, my goodness. So tell me about your clinic a little bit, Doc. What do you got going on there? Who do you have in there? You know, you treat all these headaches and all that. I mean, are you by yourself?
No, my wife is also a chiropractor.
Okay.
She does a lot of cranial sacral. You know, we met in school, right? And so she runs the office side, the business side of the practice more than actual patient contact. She does both. Okay. But I'm the heavy patient contact hours. Okay. And then I have an associate doctor who's a CrossFit champion, actually. So he's 31 years old and he has like 2% body fat and a full head of hair. So I half hate him, but he's a great guy. So we have a good time. He has a very, you know, athlete-based practice.
Okay.
He also works with migraines. I've been sort of showing him some of the stuff I do and he shows me some of the stuff that he does. And between the two of us, we get a lot done. Then we have three massage therapists. Who sort of have different, you know, aspects of what they do, soft tissue, deep soft tissue, down to, you know, more energy healing type of things.
Okay.
And then I rent some space upstairs to other massage therapists and family counselors. They have a 2-story building that I purchased 15 years ago.
Okay.
So it's been pretty cool to have that. It's a freestanding building and 5 staff members and it's busy and it's cool. You know, I love what I do, you know?
Oh, awesome. Well, speaking about what we do, I mean, I know we've had some long healthcare philosophical conversations 30 years ago, but maybe fill in the gaps for me and the listening audience. Like if I was a new patient with all kinds of chronic disease, what would be the philosophy you would give them, you know, about life, health?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I start out telling patients, you know, what my job is.
Okay.
And they have all these ideas, a new patient. If they've been to a chiropractor, they know that style. If they haven't been, they're seeing it on like CNN or some silly statement about what chiropractic really is and drug company owned, you know, nonsense. But I tell everybody, you know, to be a little facetious and be funny, I say, I'm actually a doctor of stagnation. I find stagnation and I create flow. I said, so all disease, I've discovered the cure for all disease and I've discovered the cause of all disease. And people go, oh God, you know, this guy's arrogant, you know?
Yeah.
I said, the cause of all disease is a stagnation of something. And the cure is a creation of flow to that stagnation. And I go right to psychology because they're going to think I'm talking about blood because circulation is blood, right?
Yep.
I want to get them off that because obviously that circulates, but that's the obvious one. And I say, you go for counseling and what do you see? You have your preconceived ideas and these patterns of thought that you're you just keep going through and you can't get out of your own way. And he or she comes in as a counselor and gives you new patterns and new ideas. Like, you know, like I love when people are overwhelmed. I think it was Jordan Peterson, who I absolutely love. He said, I give people an idea. Okay, you're overwhelmed. What's the smallest thing you can do today to get you in the direction that you want to go? The smallest.
Like, smallest like, baby take on the step. Big
one. Take on the big one, right? That's something you would do because you just got energy of seven people in you. Yeah. But most people don't. So they're like, yeah. Oh, the smallest. Well, I can cut my toenails today. You know, yeah. I can get that done because I haven't showered in a month. You know, and if they're really depressed, right?
Yeah, no, so, we've seen those.
Oh, yeah, right. So what we want to be able to do is get people, and then that's done. And then, okay, what's the smallest, next smallest? And you start to, you know, for someone of low energy that's just half given up, those are really nice ways of going. And I say, what are we doing? You've stagnated in your patterns and in your life, and I'm giving you flow. I'm giving you ideas. You're moving, and life is motion, right? Water and motion, right? So then I get into, okay, what other areas may you be stagnating in? From bowel function to, you know, your spinal movement, right? That's what chiropractors do, obviously. And when someone's getting a headache, to me, that's a stagnant physiology of something. Something is sitting still, probably a pocket of inflammation at the base of C1, C2, and your occiput. And I got to get in there and create a flow through pressure and motion and impulse, tractioning, whatever it takes to get 30-degree curve back in the neck and mechanical and rotational findings and all the stuff that it creates. So I say I find stagnation and I create flow. And that kind of opens up, I think, a lot of people going, okay, so this guy isn't just going to snap me around. He's actually thinking in big terms and he's thinking globally. Mm-hmm. Right? And I always break it down for them as well. You, if you wanted to hurt somebody or heal somebody, you have three ways. You can get them mechanically, right? You can drop a giant weight on their head, or you can do a surgery or a chiropractic adjustment or a massage. You can get them emotionally, right? Scared the daylights out of them, intimidated, mm-hmm. fill them with propaganda. Mm-hmm. Or you can give them the truth, the word of God, you know, the ancient wisdom, and wake them up that way.
Science.
Right, right. Or chemically, right? Yeah. The food and the drugs.
Yeah.
And the water, right? So in those three areas, there's potential for good and harm. And my job is to say, what are the three areas we can really improve in each of those three areas? What can we do for each of those? And so then at that point, you know, I think people are going, okay, I got some work to do. And it starts to look like they're going to be involved. It's not just me adjusting them and they go home and do whatever they want. It's like, okay, you know, especially I love when a patient comes back and says, well, it's been three visits and I'm the same. I'm like, okay, that is completely acceptable. But what have you been doing? You know what I'm doing? I'm doing my thing here, right? I'm doing all the things that I think I should do. Remember, I gave you those four or five things to do, you know, and then usually like, well, yeah, I didn't drink water. I didn't stretch. I didn't read that book. I didn't, you know, you didn't do anything. Okay, well, no. This is teamwork. This isn't knock you out and remove something. You know, that's a very passive thing. This is an active relationship between you and I. I'm going to lead you into health through a series of different statements and ideas, and you have to do them. I remember Wayne Dyer saying he's a voodoo therapist, right? Because he wants you to do stuff, right? It isn't just... I mean, you think he said in an hour counseling session, he gave the person 5 minutes to complain about their mother and all the things wrong with their life. And then the rest was, here's how we're going to, this things we're going to do. We're making plans to take action, you know? So I think that sums it up.
That's amazing. I found the same thing. And maybe you can commiserate with me. I have broken down my report of findings for people out there. That's where you do the exam. You see the patient, you review records in the case, and then you give them, okay, here's our plan. Your doctor will give you a plan. My plan has been so simplified. It takes me less than 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. I say, I want you to drink 3 to 4 liters of clean, clear water every day, 8 hours of sleep and 100 grams of protein. Mm-hmm. That's it. I don't even get into exercise. Okay. I mean, I find doc that people don't even drink enough water.
No.
How does your immune system work if you can't?
Flow. You need a flood.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I tell people there's a lot of stuff that has to move around in your body, and water's like a magic carpet.
Yeah.
Mucus is the stuff that gets the magic carpet stuff out of your body, and water's a magic carpet to circulate things through. And imagine squirting down a driveway covered in mud with a really weak amount of water with your hose. Your hose is drizzling, and you're trying to squirt mud down your cement driveway with a grit. Obviously, it's not going to do very well. We want a fire hose.
Yeah.
Right? And you got to get that pressure up and that volume up. And I think, and I've often wondered, you know, why is it that we have to drink so much water, right? And what is going on? Did caveman, did the hunter-gatherers drink out of a stream until he couldn't stand it anymore? And then I realized the majority of the foods we're eating are dehydrated because they're lighter to ship, right? Processed food, make it light, fill the bag up with air, take all the water out, and then stick that thing on a train or a plane and get it to the next area, right? So I think when you have an understanding of the healthiest foods in the world are water rich. I'd heard that the hunter-gatherer ate 200 different species of plants in his time. You think about the phytonutrient content in that variety of food, and you wonder why did they do so well? And we're eating like three vegetables, broccoli, sweet potato, right? Yeah. Someone who thinks they're doing healthy things will say, okay, I got some kale. Well, fantastic. Obviously, it's amazing. But the phytonutrient variation between kale and a purple carrot versus a yellow carrot versus an orange carrot varies greatly, right? Eat the rainbow, as they always say. Make your plate colorful.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me more about, and I also have a note here that you used to do Bradley, husband. Yeah. Tell me a little bit about that, because, of course, I got a soon-to-be midwife in my house.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
Yeah, Belinda's almost done. Tell me about a little bit about that.
Well, in school, my wife, Brigetta, was coming to chiropractor, and she studied under Carol Phillips, who did a lot of pediatric chiropractic and a lot of midwifery. And she gave us the idea that Dr. Bradley from the 1950s had this sort of realization in the 1950s that birthing was considered a hospital event all of a sudden. It wasn't natural, right? How could it not be natural? It's happening in nature, and it's basically, you're making another human being. What's more natural than that?
Yeah.
But they're treating it like a medical condition because of the fear. Because there's pain and people don't want to feel pain. So I don't know what it feels like to give birth. God bless anybody who can do it well. So we basically just got trained in Bradley method. We took classes and had our first daughter at home.
Okay.
Then we had a bit of a postpartum bleed, not really, really, really mild hemorrhage. So we understood more about what Pitocin does, and our midwife handled it beautifully. Everything was fine. That midwife, I don't know if she lost her licensure or what happened. So we ended up going with another nurse practitioner who started out as a midwife, who loved natural childbirth, wasn't doing it as much, but loved the idea. Didn't really attract the clientele, but we were that clientele. So she worked out of hospitals. So we had our second daughter in a hospital with completely natural. We got a little fortune. Some of the nurses that day were also very much into it. In New York State, you cannot give birth underwater. It's one
what?
Of those, oh, yeah. Well, drug companies really own Albany, and they give a lot of flack on scope of practice for midwifery, naturopathy, and as well as chiropractic.
Let me interrupt you a minute, Doc. Can you have midwives in New York, traditional midwives, like my wife's going to graduate here in a couple weeks?
Yes. But there are a lot of restrictions over what they're doing, and getting backup, getting a obstetrician to back you up is very difficult.
Oh, gotcha.
Just a lot of bad press. And I don't know where it's at right now, because we haven't taught classes in a little while. We've just been busier as the kids get older in college and everything else. And the practice being so busy too, because we did that towards the very beginning. We did it for 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was loads and loads and loads of couples. And she taught the majority of it because it's really more her passion. I came in and taught the coach's perspective. Okay. So I would mainly be talking to the husband's boyfriend. Sometimes the mother was the coach.
Yeah.
And that was pretty cool because, I was able to summarize. The big thing here is your baby's going to be born if you wait long enough. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Right.
You can't slow the process.
Yeah. And complications from pregnancy mostly are from tough situations, when a woman has a history of drug use, when there's abuse in the relationship. The emotional factors play a big role. A lot of midwives will not take, and I don't know if your daughter's got into this yet, but a lot of midwives won't take a client that doesn't have a stable relationship of some type. Even if the father of the baby is not in the scene at all, it's fine if the mother or a good friend or someone else is going to be the coach of the situation.
Belinda talks about this all the time, and it's not my daughter. It's my wife who went back to school. She's 45.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, that's all right. She went back to school to do the midwifery.
Oh, wow, great.
Yeah, good for her. It's really hard running a household. She helps my clinic out, and She's full-time student, catching babies. She's and she just won the world championships a month ago and set records. Yeah.
So
we're insane. You can imagine my household.
Yeah, I mean, I know you found the right woman, that's for sure.
But no, she talks about, oh, this person was raped or this person was abused. Mm-hmm. You know, this can be long labor. She'll call me and say, I'm not coming home tonight. There's no way.
Yep.
Based on the emotion, you know, based on the emotional history.
Exactly. You think about what birth is. I tell women that when I would teach that class, that it's letting go.
Mm. Right?
Like faith has a lot to do with being able to let go.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to hang on to something and grab something else. Sometimes you got to like let go and be in a void of nothing before the next thing happens.
Yes. Because
a person losing a job, they're unemployed and they get sick, their stomach, they're like, God, I don't have a purpose or I don't have this. And then they find another job and they're in relief again. But sometimes that's the only way to do it. You have to let go. And I tell women that it's a matter of letting go, and you will let go when you feel comfortable. It's what do you like? You think of the nesting reflex that happens, mm-hmm. right? A woman starts to make her nest. Just, you know, that very animal instinct, beautiful instinct to prepare an environment for a child. That is very necessary. And when you make a great nest, in whatever way you do it, it's a simple crib and a nice paint in the room. That says, I'm ready. I'm ready to let go. This baby's going to come out into a secure world that I put together very, very efficiently and very well. And I always encourage that. I was like, where's the baby's room? What do you have? Have you have things set up yet? I always want people to say, okay, I'm completely ready to have this baby. And the coach's perspective is always one of the pillar of sameness. I say, you know, I get in trouble for this one, of course, but it's, I don't care. A man tends to be mostly sameness, right? The rock. That's masculinity in its probably extreme, maybe. And a woman is difference, right? It's change. It's water. So there's flow.
Flexibility. Yeah.
Right? And yeah. And men are not creatures of flow. We tend to be a little more pillar-like.
We don't flex.
Not very good. Touching your toes can be a problem.
Have you looked at me? Oh, my God.
Imagine what your hamstrings are like these days. Next time I see you, I'm taking care of those hamstrings. But there's, so in this flowing event of hormones and all these during birth, it's so comforting to have a pillar saying sameness to you. In other words, saying things like, you know, these are the contractions. We're in transition now. You know, my wife at one point asked, you know, how many more contractions is it going to be? And the midwife had a great answer, 537. We should have made up a number for fun. And we all laughed, right? She goes, you know, you're dilated. You know, the baby's head's visible now. You know, real answers after the joke. And we had three natural childbirths, put it that way, two in a hospital, one at home.
Okay.
This woman was incredible. She told us after our third birth, the second one that she did, we reminded her of why she got into this to begin with, because she was getting sucked into that medical birth thing a little bit.
Oh, wow. You know,
against her heart. Mm-hmm. But then we came along with this hippie attitude. You know, and she's like, this is why I did it. You know, she grew up, she's more of a, you know, the 60s child.
Okay.
You know, so she's like, this is why I became a midwife. You know, she's crying. We're all crying. It was beautiful, you know. And we had three pretty healthy girls, right?
Excellent.
You'd appreciate this. Someday I'm going to get my youngest fully in the weight room doing exactly what she's meant to do. My youngest was born 11 pounds, 2 ounces.
Okay.
And 22 and a half inches long. She's currently...
Did your wife beat the hell out of you?
She was my daughter. I'm talking about my daughter.
Yeah, I know.
My youngest daughter, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's but she's 5'11". I won't tell you her weight because she probably would kill me. But she's strong as you can't even imagine, right? So my associate doctor, Dr. Nick.
Is she two bills?
Is she what?
Is she at least two bills?
Just under.
Oh, shit, she's a power lifter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. She doesn't seem to like it too much, but there's time. There's time. I'm working
on it. Have you brought her to a powerlifting meet where they're cheering and screaming?
No.
And
I got to do that.
They're signing autographs, you know? Like when people come up to Belinda, now she's only, oh God, she's going to kill me, but she got up to 158 pounds, 159 for the worlds. She mm-hmm. didn't want to stay at 148 and diet. But I mean, she's ripped. She's bulked. And like sometimes people say, oh, I don't want to be that big. I don't want to be that muscular. You know how goofballs are. It's 2020. We're supposed to be socially open, right? mm-hmm. you know, gender non-specific, all that, but mm-hmm. they still look at a strong woman and say that's wrong. You know, I don't want to be like that. Does that make sense? I figured we get past all that.
I see that out there. It makes zero sense to me because, I mean, I grew up with the love of Vikings and the concept of shield maidens.
Yeah.
And to me, why would I want a weak woman when I can have a strong woman? I mean,
exactly.
What is that about? She's on my side, you know, hopefully.
She squats yeah. more than me. I want her on our team, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
She outbenches me. I love the faces we get in the weight room. Like, you know, there's be some new powerlifters in there, and this high school guy was doing like five plates, and he was all excited, wrapped his knees, did 500 pounds. That's great. And my wife put 600 pounds on. She's like, he's like counting. And I go, oh, yeah, it's more than you did. And she's half your size. Yeah. And that's she's insane. A grandma. So,
yeah. Oh, my God. That's so insane. That yeah. is mind blowing.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But it's interesting how, you know, she said, you know, it's really great in her job as a midwife when she has a 250, 300 pound mom faint or something like that. Who's going to get that person off the floor? She does.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. No so, problem. Yeah. So, but it's interesting, all those preconceived notions. So bring your daughter to a powerlifting meet, because when she comes to a powerlifting meet, guess who's a celebrity? Mm-hmm. They're like, ooh, Belinda Clary's here. Belinda Clary's here. Did you see Belinda Clary's here? Yeah. And I mean, you know, she's a star, you know?
Yeah.
And even in COVID times, when we went to a meet in South Dakota, she was a star. So if your wife, excuse me, your daughter sees that difference, mm-hmm. You know, and like my kids are used to it. It's like, oh yeah, my dad's Fred Clary. Fred Clary, the Fred Clary, you know, they're like, yeah, whatever. Like my 14-year-old Callie was walking in and she had one of her friends here and says, well, do you lift weights and all that? And I said, yeah, you know, I've squatted 900 and deadlifted 800 as a teenager, and her jaw dropped. I think it was Jody. And the poor little girl says, are you kidding me? And then, of course, Callie looked, rolled her eyes and said, yeah, my dad was like the strongest teenager in the world or something like that. Right? You know, just nonchalant. Yeah, whatever. Do we have to hear this story again? So the next time I saw the little girlfriend come over to do homework or something, you know, she goes, my dad lifts weights and he's a bodybuilder and he looked you up and he, oh my God, you're so cool. And Callie's just shaking her head. Oh my God, not again, you know? Yeah. So it's all perspective. So if you can bring your daughter into our world and find out she would be a superstar,
yeah,
you know? Imagine if your daughter was a great swimmer. I have a good swimmer here and just hung out with runners.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. Well, her thing is volleyball.
Yeah,
she's an outside hitter. She's an outside hitter. She's got a good, for her weight, she's got an amazing vertical leap.
Yeah.
Because of the strength, right? Yep. And when she hits the ball, it sounds like a cannon going off. People just run.
Good bench. I mean,
literally, she knocks people over. You know, people are flinching and twitching. It's really funny to watch.
Oh, it's lovely.
I don't have that mass relative to who, you know, for a man, relative to a man, but my father did, right? So
okay.
I sort of passed on, and she's got my father's eyes, really, really wild. I sort of passed on the Hulk gene to my daughter, right? And forget a Swedish. My wife is Swedish and German, so
Viking.
There's some tall. Oh yeah, there's some tall Vikings over there, as you know, from Minnesota, because she's from from Minnesota. As our viewers don't know, but you know.
Okay. Well, that's really cool. Well, now that we've done some background, let's get into some meat. So why don't you give me the state of, before we get into the pandemic, you know, like we just breezed over the rules for midwifery. What is like alternative healthcare like in the state of New York?
Very limited. You know, there's a great respect. There's a great demand for it. People jump the border into Canada because, you know, I lived, 30 miles from the Canadian border. So people historically before the lockdown would jump over to Canada to get ozone therapy for cancer from a naturopath.
Wow.
Now, it's so dramatically different there in Ontario than it is here in New York. In New York, a naturopath can give advice, can't diagnose. So he's like a teacher, you know.
Wow.
So there are hardly any naturopaths here because it's so limited. You really can't make a living just, instructing people occasionally, without really getting into, fixing them. I have a couple of friends that are, naturopaths. They kind of do it as a sideline. They don't really make a living doing it because they're just passionate about it. And they have family here. So But they know that if they moved anywhere else, they'd have a lot better situation. So I refer my patients, if they want something really intense from the naturopathic world, to a doctor in St. Catharines over the border, Dr. Michael Pritula, amazing, amazing naturopath. And he has the scope of practice to do it.
Okay.
But I found, you know, when I first moved here, I didn't realize the hunger for natural health care was massive. So my office filled up with patients. It wasn't a problem. The problem was that reimbursement, respect, scope of practice was very limited, right?
Okay.
So I guess the upside is I act as a naturopathic doctor so often with my patients. I do something called the advanced consultation, where I sit with people for an hour. It's a cash only type of thing, and we go over everything. You know, I start with my stagnation ideas, and then I break it down, and we get into, you know, nutrition, exercise, all the stuff that you and I know. It gives me the time to sit down and really hash through it. Sometimes it becomes a psych session where I'm sharing philosophies of life. Other times I'm PNF stretching the hamstrings on the person. Anything goes in that room for that hour. If they need some kind of service that I'm educated and informed in, I do it, you know? Okay. And so it's like a naturopathic visit in a sense.
Okay. Yeah. How's the direction? I think we talked months ago how vaccines are now mandated or something.
Yeah, it was really painful to have.
So what happened?
Well, we had a religious exemption here from vaccinating. Okay. So people that weren't really into it and vaccinating their children became, just basically waived that. And you wrote a little letter, sent it to the school, and they kind of hunted and hawed, but they let it happen.
Okay.
Well, I don't think by any coincidence, there was, I believe, Merck set up a giant drug facility near Albany. And soon after that, Andrew Cuomo, our governor, decided that he was going to do away with the religious exemption. And this was a year ago in June, so a little bit more than a year ago. And the hammer fell. It was a really bunch of dirty politics. There was video of the conference where people were changing their votes and whispering to each other. It just reeked of like a House of Cards kind of scenario.
Okay.
And before you know it, we had to fully vaccinate your child to get them into school. And we debated it because our kids are partially vaccinated. They're not fully vaccinated. They're historically. And my daughter wanted to play volleyball, wanted to be a normal kid, going to school with all her friends, didn't really want to be homeschooled. You know, the stigma of that maybe in her mind. So we were sick to our stomachs, to be honest with you. And if I hadn't had a practice that was engulfed in this area, I seriously would have moved. Because
wow.
I like freedom. I'm an American, right?
And wow.
I think freedom is what makes us different from China and Russia. I mean, the Constitution is the thing that separates us from tyranny.
Mm-hmm.
So if we're going to, to me, that's a tyrannical move. It's unnecessary. I am not anti-vax. People want to throw you into that category. If you question thimerosal, aborted fetal tissue, aluminum, and mercury, if you think that those aren't good to inject into your body, you're an anti-vaxxer. How about you're a knowledgeable physician that understands the detriments of heavy metals in the body? Mm-hmm. And let's clean these vaccines up and let's try other things. I really wish there was a system that was a little bit less money ran and a little bit more science ran. But that's still in the works, I guess, as people get more knowledgeable. The new vaccine for COVID will be an interesting experience, right? People may become anti-vax really quick when they see what that may or may not do. I mean, I don't know what an mRNA vaccine, that's more your area than mine, actually does. I mean, I got the premise. But if you want to flesh that out for everybody, if you haven't already, the mRNA thing and the concept of it changing your DNA.
All mRNA does is take over the cell. That's all it does.
It just sounds so insane to me when you look at the premise that I can't imagine that this can go well. I mean, God, I hope it does, right? Wouldn't it be great? It'd be great. And then you can use that same concept to cure cancer and do all kinds of stuff, because we have Roswell Cancer Institute out here has been working with immune therapies for years. They're doing some great work. You know, I've seen patients that work there. It's like any other medical institution working on cancer, they have their pros and cons. But they're saving a lot of lives and they're doing some great work. And they've done a lot of getting that immune system to attack the cancer type of therapies. And I don't know, I believe the mRNA concept is related to that, but I don't know that for fact.
Well, for the listeners out there who didn't listen to the national podcasters on or haven't been paying attention to my podcast, messenger RNA, mRNA, is what's used by viruses and used by our own cells to program protein production. What that means, if I'm going to make a skin cell, make some hair, my eyeball, if I'm making a hormone, an enzyme, that's all done through mRNA. Once you inject mRNA, whatever that message says, it's going to run. It's like your, it's like the program on your heart, on your computer. You have hardware, that's your cell, but the mRNA is the program you put in. And, you know, what everything is what the software says. So if you get a virus, it will take over your laptop. It will take over your tower. It will take over your computer. What they're trying to do is give mRNA from the COVID, but it's not a complete mRNA. It's not the whole sequence. So it's going to, so your cells will start making the spikes, the S spikes. And then your immune system is going to freak out and say, well, this isn't Fred's cell, and, you know, kill the cell and hopefully make an antibody to it. Right. Great premise.
Right.
Great premise.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. mRNA is the most powerful biological substance in the universe. It reprograms cells. So think about cancer, like you were talking about, Doc. If we could find, if you could take someone's stem cells, their germ cells, the original cells that can do anything, pull that mRNA out and force the cancer to receive that, your cancer cells would either die, apoptosis we call it, or become healthy cells.
Gotcha.
That's how powerful mRNA is. For people to say, well, why didn't, is this new? Yes. The way we do vaccines now, and help me through this, Doc, is we take a piece of the bug that's killed, chop it up, and put it in a syringe, right? Is
exactly.
that how we do it?
An attenuated virus, so
okay.
one that isn't together enough to be recognized by a cell and be reproduced.
Okay.
And then we have to put an adjunct in, which is a lot of times aluminum, and to get the immune system upset. Because a small bit of a chopped up virus inside inside the body might not care enough.
Yeah.
But if you get the immune system to race, and then have that available, it starts racing. It sees that and says, wow, this is something crazy. Just like somebody who's in a state of fear, they see a little shadowy thing in the corner and they think that's something crazy and dangerous because they're in the state of fear. If they weren't in the state of fear, they'd see that and go, that's just a box in the corner.
Okay.
Your immune system gets into this hyper state because of the aluminum or any adjunct. There's a bunch of different ones. And then, of course, the immune system starts to make antibodies to that chopped up virus's body. And then those antibodies can go work on the real virus, right? That's the premise. Now, once again, not a bad premise, but the problems around it have to do with what do you have to do? You have to preserve that virus, right? So it's preserved in mercury, thimerosal, that kind of thing. And also ethylene glycol, often, which is radiator fluid. There's some crazy stuff in there. And then they'll change it and they'll say, well, this one doesn't have mercury. This one doesn't have that. Well, that's great. What mystery substance is in there? Most docs don't know. They just inject away and... The question, I think, with a lot of vaccines is, you know, at what point is this a problem? Okay, the child makes it through the night. The child then becomes immune to this, to measles, let's say. But is there a chronic effect later? Did you do something that makes a chronic disease? With all the conditions that you see later in life, from chronic fatigue and fibromyalgia to allergies, other autoimmune diseases, is this a trigger? Are these shots a trigger for that? That's the question. And then it's, you know, like I say, I'm not anti-vax, so... Maybe that's worth it in certain conditions. It might be worth it to have a situation where, you know, you're stopping this horrifying disease and you're creating small chronic problems later in someone's life. Maybe that trade-off's worth it. I don't know the answer to that, but I just wish it wasn't forced. You know, I wish it was not. Mandates are crazy. I think they're crazy. You know, I just don't agree with that.
We don't force people to drive a car, as dangerous as that is, right? Yeah. Much more dangerous than vaccines if you do the stats.
Right.
We don't force people to do that, but we force them to get vaccines. I don't understand that. We don't force people to ride motorcycles or to powerlift, you know?
Yeah.
You know, as wrecked as your body could be.
Yeah.
Well, it's for the public good. There's nothing proven out there that it's for the public good.
My first couple of kids, when we had them partially vaccinated, you know, other parents would say stuff like, well, your kid's going to give my kid measles. I'm like, well, okay, your kid is vaccinated to measles, so doesn't that work? And that concept that my child's going to pick up measles from somewhere and then just spread them all around to vaccinated kids is just not founded from my understanding. Unvaccinated kids being exposed to measles. Well, sure, you can get measles if you're not vaccinated, but you know, look at, if you look at the path of measles, it, you know, for a couple, I've heard from a couple of years, the body can be a little thrown by that. So other diseases can crop in, and that becomes the problem. And I think the upside of the measles vaccine is measles hasn't mutated. From my understanding, that's why the vaccine is less dangerous and seems to be working. I don't think they don't work. The evidence is there. I mean, a rabies vaccine works.
Yes, it does.
And look at rabies, the 100% death rate with rabies.
Yes.
You get bit by a rabid animal, you die 100% of the time. This is a fantastic vaccination, right?
Yeah.
Then there's stuff with the chickenpox vaccine. At what point do we draw the line at innocent things and have to stop them? Oh my God, chickenpox, you know? And you and I have got into this privately, the idea of what is a virus purpose? What is it really doing? Are they all bad? We've learned recently that certain bacteria in your intestine are the things, it's another being. It's like another organ, like we were saying, with the mitochondria being incorporated in the cell.
Yeah.
This biome in our intestine, we only recently realized that all those bacteria in there are there for a good reason. What about viruses? If 8 to 20% from what I read of your genome is viral, right? What is going on when we get a viral infection? Is this just plain bad and to be avoided at all costs? I don't believe that that's true. I'm not saying I know which viruses to pick up and cough and sneeze and suffer through to make you better. I don't know. But I think that's a question that people should ask. And when we're going to go full-fledged with experimental vaccines on the public in a massive way without proper research and proper time on a virus that has a very low death rate, even though it has a high infection rate, right? Numbers are surging right now. Everybody's upset about it. Well, it's contagious. No one really argued that. But you're going to risk something like that. I personally, with my demographic, I would much rather take my chance with the virus than the vaccination.
That's just I actually want this virus because it's just a very bad cold. And right now, as we speak, you have at least four coronaviruses on your laptop, Doc. You have it in your lungs. You're everywhere around you. You have OC43, 2229E, NL63, and HKU1. Those four coronaviruses cause 30% of all the upper respiratory infections in the world today, right now. Yeah. Right now. Yeah. And they're so small, just like COVID-19, they go everywhere. So it's not a question of trying to avoid this. If you breathe air as a human being on this earth, you will get this coronavirus on you. Whether it's a high enough load, a high enough number to cause you sickness is a whole different question. Mm-hmm. And like you said, I hate to say it, I take a step back and look at evolution and that philosophy. Every time there's a major pandemic or outbreak, it's an upgrade to the program. You know, like Zoom, you just downloaded Zoom today on your laptop for the first time. I'm honored that, you know, I get to be your first Zoom call. But, you know, next year there's going to be an update to Zoom, right? And you open up Zoom and say, I'm going to download the update, right? Well, you don't think that humans, with all our survival characteristics and whoever designed us, whether that was God or evolution or both, do you really think that there's not an upgrade there? We're upgrading all the time.
Yeah.
So we can survive in this environment. We don't live just 45 years now. We live 85.
Yeah.
We need a lot more upgrades. We're lasting longer.
Well, think of this too. They talk about how the pressure on the environment has caused viruses to jump from one animal to another. Let's go with that concept. Okay, so if there's pressure on the environment, that means the environment's changing.
Yes.
All right, so how do we adapt to a changing environment? Do we stay the same? Well, that's probably not good.
Nope.
We have to adapt to the environment. If it's cold out, how do you adapt to put a jacket on?
Yeah.
You just don't go out there and say, well, I'm waiting for the season to change. Minnesota, you can put a jacket on, you're dead in about a half hour probably, right?
Yep, exactly.
So I think we have to accept to some degree. And to me, the way this virus is handled that frustrates me the most is we've known for about 6 months who the vulnerable population to this is. I do not want my parents dying from this virus, right? So they're vulnerable a little bit, one more than the other. So in that situation, let's really be careful with them. You know, I would be more than happy if they eased up on the shutdowns all day Saturday, incorporate me out there delivering groceries to people's doorsteps. Be happy to do the list, like those grocery apps that the young kids are doing oftentimes. I'll just deliver them all day just so I can go to work and just so gyms can open and hair salons can open. You know, I mean, let's look at vectors of infection properly. You know, let's get a real good look at where infection's coming from, right? What's viral load? And I sympathize with the public because people just don't have the information about their immune system or viruses like you and I do. Like here's something interesting, and I think maybe we share this a little as well. The first way I fell in love with science was science fiction. I watched science fiction movies as a little kid, Star Trek, of course.
Yep.
And then the second thing that hit me I couldn't have been more bored with school in the beginning. And I'm sitting in middle school, and Mr. Preston, the science professor, said viruses actually aren't alive. They don't fit the criteria of living organisms. I remember waking up from my trance of daydreaming and went, what is that? How that can't be right. And the first time I ever held stood after class to ask a question when everybody else filtered out was, Mr. Preston, how could it not be alive if it infects and kills and does all the stuff it does? And he was so excited, he erased the board in a panic because the student actually cared. It was middle school, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't know who I was. You know, I was just like hiding in the back.
You weren't drooling over a girl or something.
Right. I wasn't distracted by the usual stuff. I was like a science nerd enough, you know. And when he went over, you know, the criteria of what life is and how a virus doesn't fulfill all those properties, I think if I'm correct, he said that if you sneeze a virus on a table and you spray something on it, you can't kill it. You can only degrade it.
Yes, it's degraded.
It's not really alive at that
point. You never kill a virus.
Yeah, because it doesn't have enough.
It's not alive.
Yeah, it doesn't have a respiratory system, doesn't have an immune system, doesn't have a nervous system, can't ambulate.
Nope.
They can't do any. There's so many things it can't do. So if that's the case, obviously, this is a confusing concept for the general public that something that can be sneezed out of a living organism, made by a living organism, is somehow and infects people and changes their physiology and the immune system gets upset. How is it not alive? And the best analogy I came up with is imagine breathing in asbestos. Asbestos isn't alive, but what does it do? Mesothelioma, a big disease of the lungs. If you breathe in enough little glass fibers and they etch, and pretty soon you got a lung problem. That asbestos is not alive, but look what it did, right? It's not alive at all. It's man-made completely, artificially. It's not made by the man's body. It's made in factory, right? So there are things that get in our bodies that cause reactions. We don't make more asbestos, right? But we can make viruses because they are enough like us biologically with RNA and the DNA and protein, the fact that it's what we are, right? So you can understand that that's a problem. So viruses were the first thing that made me kind of go, wow, science is really cool. Because, you know, that's the second thing, of course, it was science fiction films. And then an introduction to real life science fiction, which is what I've been studying ever since. Science fiction films still are amazing, but you know, one in 70 of them are amazing because most science fiction films are horror action in the future, you know, violence and, you know, they're not really, but occasionally you get these amazing films that question an extrapolation of where we're going. You can really go point A, point B, and we're living at B, and you can say C and get it even half right. You know, you're a science fiction author. And that's why scientists make the best science fiction authors. They have that ability to write and they have the science mind. You should be writing science fiction.
it'd be terrible. It'd be terrible. I would be a benevolent dictator. And every time there's a pandemic, I would close the fast foods. I would force the gyms open and I would fine everyone for being 10 pounds overweight.
Absolutely. What I said to my patients, the same thing. I said, I would be, it's funny, maybe, I don't know if we said this to each other before. I said to my patients months ago, before I was talking to you recently, I said, if I ran this country, I would be a benevolent dictator. It's exactly what I said. It shows how our minds link up. And then I said, the first thing I would do was get a fork truck, take all the sugar out of every supermarket, set it on fire in the parking lot, on film, get on a microphone in front of the giant blaze of burning sugar and say, this is how we're getting out of this pandemic.
Yeah.
Do you know the stats? Is it one teaspoon of sugar decreases your immune system function 80% for 20 minutes? That's not way far off. There's something like that out there. I don't know the exact numbers. I have to look it up.
Now you know me. You forced me to spend half the day
you're
finding it.
Day's over. You're going to be looking that one up. Yeah, I think it's refined white sugar. I think it's one teaspoon is 80% decrease in immune system function for 20 minutes or something. No.
Yeah.
And doesn't it make sense? I mean, it's a drug. Remember pharmacology class? I remember the pharmacology professor said, you were in my class with me.
Was that that pharmacist guy, that little dweeble guy? Oh,
yeah. He was asking, nuts. What's a drug, you know? And I think his definition that I did like was, it was any substance that created a radical change in your physiology.
Yep.
And I think you said refined white sugar. And
yep, then someone else up,
cheeseburger, you know? And we're looking at different things that man has made, you know, that are radical shifts in the physiology of the body to the point where you've just thrown yourself out of equilibrium so far that disease is just waiting to take over.
For the audience, can you explain equilibrium?
Okay. To me, when you look at, like, take Buddha, for example. Buddha's big phrase was the middle way, right? He always wanted to get in the center, and he thought that was the way to live, so you weren't in extremes, and the extremes were disturbing. Equilibrium is that center state of all the processes of your body. So if your testosterone is too high or too low, if you're too cold or too hot, or you have too many, you don't have enough minerals to cue enzymes and you can't get physical processes going. It's that middle of, it isn't, the big idea that opposes this is more is better, right? More is not better. You know,
more antibiotics will kill more bugs.
Right, right. Pretty soon you killed all the good stuff in your body and then you have an autoimmune problem sooner or later. Right. So I think the big question with equilibrium is, you know, what is it? How can we approach it? And I remember listening to, I think it was Jordan Peterson going on about euphoria and the dangers of euphoria. People, you know, strive for this state of euphoria with drugs and sex and violence and whatever. And he said, the real problem there is, you know, you're exhausting the chemistry of the mind that feels euphoria. And then when it's over, you're going to go so far down to rebuild that chemistry that you're going to end up lower than you've ever felt. Because you got that high, you're going to get that low. And what that means is you're bouncing between equilibriums. Now, if you live a life just on equilibrium and everything is about, you know, walking slow and eating oatmeal and not offending everybody, you're going to be stagnant. You've got it. And that's probably where the biggest errors come is how much should I pull my body out of equilibrium? One of my favorite things to do is climb in the Rockies. My goal is to get on the top 14,000 foot peaks in Colorado. I've been chipping away and we got five of them done. And that is an extreme feeling, right? I mean, you're walking up a hill about 4,000, 5,000 feet up into thin air. It's about a 4 hour up and about a 3 hour down. And it has that marathon like feel to it. And so beautiful at the top, it's worth it. But I'm thinking, you know, I'm not pulling myself out of equilibrium entirely. Mm-hmm. Where someone like yourself, I think you have a natural love of being pulled out of equilibrium. I mean, to set a world's record, you cannot be in equilibrium.
No.
Right? But you paid a price for that, right? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at my spine and my body, I'm wrecked. Yeah.
Right. Emotionally, chemically, physically, you paid for that. And then, you know, I had an ex-lineman for Texas A&M as a patient, and he got injured, didn't make pro. He's a big dude and perfect type of, he's an offensive lineman, very, you know, but kind of healer personality, big, big dude. And he's all messed up, and he's in his 60s. And I said, you know, basically, was it worth it? He smiled. He goes, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
And he said,
I'm only upset, Doc, that, you know, with my spine now being so bad and they want to do fusions and things, I'm almost upset that I didn't get to pick my last meet, you know, kind of my pain and my problems did. And that doesn't mean I'm going to stop. I'll probably still be a bench press specialist. But the interesting thing is, you know who Ronnie Coleman is?
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Olympia, he can barely walk, 11 surgeries on his back. His problem is they recommended the same surgery for me they gave Ronnie, and I'm like, no, you know, I'll find a different one. If I got to fly to California, the Republic of California, to get that surgery. But he's had 11 surgeries, can barely walk, and Joe Rogan, I don't know if you listen to him.
All the time, I love Joe.
You got to listen to that whole Ronnie Coleman thing. Joe Rogan asked Ronnie, do you have any regrets? And he smiled and goes, yeah, that time I squatted 800 pounds. And of course, Rogan's thinking, oh, he's going to say, you wrecked your back. Yeah. I could have got 3 or 4 reps, not 2.
Exactly. That sounds like you. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm living that now just in the last couple of weeks, you know, about that passion for life, you know, going out there and being the best. And like with this pandemic, with a lot of the COVID scared people and the tinfoil hats they wear, I mean, and that includes our leaders. The thing that kills me is like, I'll have people saying to me, Fred, you know, you don't believe in it and all that. I said, stop. This is a real thing.
Yeah.
But I want to know exactly what it is. And you know what? Look at my life. I'm in my 50s. I love powerlifting. I coach. I teach. I'm an elder in my church. I'm involved crazily with my kids. You know, I love being a parent. I love being a husband, a friend, a lover. I love life. I love the arts. I love music. Why the hell would I want to lose one day of life here? Yeah. I want to protect my own life, and I'm like a bulldog, and I protect my kids and my family, right? Why would you think I would ever be reckless with their lives or mine? In fact, I get up every day because we're in the middle of a pandemic and a lockdown again here in Minnesota, studying the bug, studying everything about it, studying the stats so I can be the most well-informed human to take care of mine and my own.
Yep, exactly. Exactly what I do. And that's why I always appreciate what you put on Facebook, on the neurology website or neurology Facebook page. It's just such awesome stuff. I mean, I've been able to quote that to patients, read it, read further, you know, click on links related to it. I can't tell you how valuable it's been. And that's just you, right? I mean, you're always going to the next level, right? So I'm reading about this and I think I'm pretty informed. And then you've got a new article that's blowing my mind. I'm like, all right. I'm not going to bed, I guess, for another hour. I got to read this one. And Fred's got something good. No, it's awesome. But I've been able to go in and blow people's minds on it, my patients and my family as well, with what I really believe this thing is. And like you're saying, anytime you start talking the least bit that this thing isn't the worst plague man has seen on earth ever, people start thinking you don't believe it's real. Yeah. And I'm like, no, there's a lot of things about this that are horrifying. If we're losing people unnecessarily to a virus, that's terrible. And let's get to work on it. And let's not destroy the whole country in the process. Let's not allow all our freedoms to go down the toilet. Let's not let our leaders make executive orders to the point where they're so powerful, we're going to have trouble functioning as a society. And then we're going to end up in a civil war. I don't want any of that stuff going on. Right? I can't stand the divide on this virus. The political divide on this virus is shameful. It's absolutely shameful. My patients that come in with gloves and a mask on, they're going to vote for Biden. Why? What is that? I don't understand that. And then the ones that come in, no gloves, nothing, you know, la, 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 they're voting for Trump. It's a virus. It's not a political discussion, right? I mean, I know Trump downplayed the virus and the other side wanted to make him look horrible. So they upplayed the virus. And I get that, but let's let all that go and do some reading, right? Let's take a good look at what this really is. You know, grab a book, for God's sakes. There was a book out years ago. I think it's just called Virus. Probably needs it. I hope it's on its 10th edition. I plan on looking for that textbook just to have in my office, but like make it the only book in my waiting room. You know, get rid of all the magazines and just sit Virus sitting right there and see who paws at that thing, you know? Maybe someone will at least screenshot it and buy it later, you know? But boy, we need, and look at the good that might come out of this stuff. People might really understand their immune system sooner or later.
Thank God.
Right? They might understand, you know, probiotics. They might understand, you know, how the body works. And think of how many cancers we can prevent if people lived with respect for their immune system, right? Because right now people are like, okay, you sort of have two ways of going about it. You're doing all anti-inflammatory herbs and blood thinning things and drinking water and doing all the right stuff. Or you're home with a bag of Twinkies crying in the corner because you've got to need your food for comfort. I mean, if you're doing everything wrong to try to comfort yourself and then you're going to worry about infection, that's really incongruent. Right? Mm-hmm. Get your body healthy, for God's sakes. Do stuff we know that's empowering and healthy, and then you will worry less. Why don't I worry about dying from this virus? Because I'm not a candidate. Part of that is just by my age. Part of that is because of the most of it is my behavior. I don't do things that allow me to get sick. I don't drink any alcohol anymore. I don't ingest dairy products, and I've been off of gluten for 10 to 15 years, whatever it's been.
Wow.
Right? And I can't tell you how much more powerful. As soon as I went off of gluten, my allergies, my spring to fall allergies went down to 10% of what they were.
Wow.
And then one time I had an ice cream bar and went for a walk, and it was springtime. And I just started feeling congestion. I had this little cough and I started coughing mucus and draining the back of my throat. I thought, that's interesting. Well, I did it 3 days later on purpose, the second time, same bike path, same ice cream sandwich, same time of the day. and the weather happened to be very similar. Something, okay, decent little experiment there. And the same thing happened around the same area of this bike path. I had the same reaction. I thought, wow, I'm not doing well with dairy products right now. And let's get rid of them. And this is probably about a year ago. So getting those out, wow, wasn't that something? You know, I'm a type A blood. I'm an A positive. So that's going to be something where there's a lot of autoimmune diseases and immune problems. I don't live and die by the blood type diet, but I think it's worth reading. And I think it's worth considering as part of your health program to know what blood type you are and some of the things that are associated with it. Because I do see some decent correlations with that. I think it's what, DiMardo mm-hmm. or whatever.
Yeah.
Eat right for your type is that book. And then he wrote the genotype diet after that, which is a little more interesting. Have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
Yeah. You know, the six, I think there's six different genotypes he came up with. But yeah, I just encourage people to, you know, understand their immune system, do things that strengthen it, and, you know, live a healthier life. Get informed. Just this panic, watch, turning on CNN and then panicking. It's so,
oh my goodness.
It's so boring.
Well, and then, you know, I'm going to cover both. You covered two things real quickly there. The, you know, what we should do about it and the politics and the shame. I mean, okay, if you want to have a strong defense, wear your mask, socially distance, wear gloves, that's fine. But what's your offense? What's your offense? Are you getting sleep? We know that that helps. Are you strengthening your immune system? Are you pushing your young kids who still have a thymus gland to go out there and get the bug? So the bug they get is all, you know, is going to be chewed up by their immune system. And what they cough out and spit out, it's called sloughing or slough off to us, is a beat up bug. Right. I mean, you know, I'd rather get the bug that's gone three rounds with Mike Tyson in his prime. You know, I mean, that bug is going to be nothing. It's no difference in getting a vaccine, people, that's been attenuated, chopped up, pushed down, smacked around. And you get that bug and all of a sudden, bang, it's taken care of. What happened to SARS-1, the cousin of this one? We didn't shut down, so it floated through in the environment, in the population, and the young people killed it. Now, you can't kill a virus. They attenuated, they degraded it. I love that word, degraded it. So the SARS-1 that exists now is nothing. It's brutal, you know? It's a brutal shell of itself, you know? It might as well just go to the bar and cry in its beer, you know? Because that won't do anything. What we did with this one, we locked down, we hid all the strong Marines, the kids, right? The youngsters with the strong immune systems. We hid them from the bug. And now this bug is still the same strength. It hasn't changed. In fact, it's mutated. It hasn't clicked up totally, but now it's mutating to even be more infectious. And I'm like, are you kidding me? It's like, did they lose their minds? And that's the biggest thing. Like you said, you want to have a virus book. I have I'm looking at them, two books on just the coronavirus textbooks that came out before 2019, just a few years ago. And they talk all about this. I mean, all this information of how a C virus works has been around for at least decades. And in the last 10 years, 15 years since SARS-1, we've actually spent millions of dollars of research to learn more about how this specific flavor works. Mm-hmm. We're not following any of it, any of the science, zero.
Yes.
I feel like we're back in medieval times. Bring out your dead, you know? Right. I mean, really, you know, let's wear big masks and, you know, use Jerusalem incense and float it around and say prayers, because that's about as good as masks and gloves and social distancing would work. I'm not saying you should try that. You're going to reduce the flu. You're going to reduce rhinovirus. You're going to reduce fungus. So maybe if we're not fighting those things, we can fight COVID, but you can't shut down. Because the less we're exposed to our environment, the weaker our immune systems become. You're putting, like the boy in the plastic bubble. Why did he live? He was born without an immune system. You put him in a plastic bubble, he'll live because he's not exposed to anything. Likewise, you have to expose yourself to stuff continually to keep that immune system strong. It's every day.
Yeah.
Hey, Dr. Cleary, I drank water yesterday. You got to drink it every day. Yeah. You know, do you brush your teeth every day? You brush your teeth every day. You got to drink water every day. You got to have protein every day. Just like you have to be exposed to antigens or pieces of bugs, you got to be exposed to your environment. Go play in the mud puddles. Drink from the garden hose. You got to get out there.
Yeah, like you're saying, we have to, as the environment changes, And if you believe that global warming and what we're doing to the environment is changing it, you should also believe that that environment, we need to adapt to it. And how do you do that? You get out into it. You get out into it and you let that environment inside you, and your body then grows from that and you get stronger. You know, and if we're going to stop that, the price we're going to pay for that is massive. I mean, I liken the immune system to, imagine if you had a barracks and you said, okay, this barracks needs to be guarded. There's valuable things in it. And you put two Navy SEALs in front of the door and nothing happens. So these Navy SEALs are just sitting there and it's quiet. Now, if you know a Navy SEAL, that isn't a good state for them to be in.
No.
So what happens? Well, one guy picks up a little stone and throws it at his friend. Next guy takes a knife and throws it by his foot. Pretty soon, those guards are getting bored and they start to attack self because there's nothing else to do, right? The immune system is like that. You don't give the immune system some entertainment. Good viruses, good bugs, good bacteria overgrowing inside the intestine, and the immune system coming in and goes, that's too many, and gobble some of those up and exercise that immune system with environment and dirt, what's going to happen? The immune system can attack self, and what's that? An autoimmune disease. Right.
Can you list some autoimmune diseases for the audience?
Well, yeah, you look at rheumatoid arthritis, right? You have a genetic predisposition for this. Lupus, people have heard of that. MS. A lot of your thyroid disorders are also autoimmune. So why these happen? A lot of times these are in the cleanest people. It would be interesting, and that's probably, here's another thing for us to look up later, if there's a study on cleanliness and autoimmune diseases, and I'm sure there is, because the hygiene hypothesis, right? Yeah.
You would explain the hygiene hypothesis.
Absolutely.
It's one of my favorite things to talk about.
Exactly. I go on about it all the time. The hygiene hypothesis is this hypothesis. And when you talk science, understand the difference between a hypothesis and a fact. There's only so many facts. There's not a lot of them, actually. Most people call something a fact. It's really a hypothesis. Like evolution is a hypothesis. It's not really a fact. We're sort of guessing a little. It's a very educated guess, right?
Yeah.
Well, the hygiene hypothesis means that we basically need a challenge to the immune system. We need dirt to get in our bodies, and that'll make us stronger. And the germ theory is sort of an opposition to that, meaning that germs are bad, they cause disease, and we must get rid of them from the environment and don't let them touch us. And there's a lot of, if you really look into this, there is way more evidence that hygiene hypothesis is correct. I was reading a study the other day. They took an intestinal swab in city kids, and they looked at all the stuff found in there, bacteria, viruses, everything. And they did that with country kids. And I think the surprising thing was they both had X amount of bacteria. It was almost the same. Mm-hmm. The big cool thing was that the country kids had a massive diversity of bacteria.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
They then realized, because they were looking at asthma, like okay. City kids had asthma, country kids tended not to.
It's the pollution.
Yeah, right. Well, if you're only touching subway dirt and people dirt, and you don't have chickens and pigs and horses and sheep and zebras or whatever else is on a crazy farm, llamas.
Giraffes.
Yeah, you're not going to get a diversity of bacterium. And that diversity was allowing people's immune systems to be stronger. How exactly that mechanism works, I'm not sure, but your immune system probably is saying, boy, I really can recognize good from bad, right? So I'm not going to get bored. I have a lot to do here. I got a lot of different bacteria to keep an eye on. I'm not going to get hyperimmune or autoimmune, which, you know, the most simple autoimmune disease is an allergy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I have a propensity genetically, I believe, to have allergies. So for me, with the type A blood, and I've had to do a couple things throughout my life to keep those at bay, right? And that's one of the reasons I don't get sick very often. My immune system, I believe, runs high. It runs kind of viciously. It's always looking for stuff to do. It's one of the reasons I got into taking probiotics, and I'm not afraid of dirt. I'm more afraid of processed foods than anything else, right? So, I mean, if you really want to hurt yourself, it isn't digging in the garden and being around your friends. It's eating processed food. Right. I mean, look at how many lives that has taken away.
Yeah. The
absolute idea.
You can't garden right now. They won't let you.
That's really scary and weird.
It's scary and weird.
Right. You're not going to allow people to grow food. I've heard stuff like that. I mean, I don't understand what that's coming from. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Corporate farms, you know, Monsanto's patented Roundup Ready seeds. That helps.
That can't hurt us.
No, God, no. You just spray the Roundup right over the top and everything's great. Right? I mean, you see these commercials on television about Roundup causing every disease on Earth, and then people don't realize that their food's being aerial sprayed with that. Am I wrong? I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, that a Roundup Ready seed means you can spray Roundup on it and everything dies but the plant with the Roundup Ready seed.
Correct.
So it's getting basked in Roundup, and then you're eating it.
Yeah.
So, fantastic. Wonder why we have leaky gut syndrome. From my understanding, glycosides, Roundup, pesticide, break down that tight junction between the small intestine cells, and food leaks into your bloodstream as non-self, then you attack it, right?
So I have a whole different view on disease and pathology, and you know, we don't have time. We're going to have to do another podcast just to cover it. But I don't see as the Roundup breaking down those tight junctions in the gut. I see that's our reaction from the body to get rid of this Roundup.
Yeah. Okay.
There's nothing, you know, there's dis-ease, but I see everything is just adaptation. Like everyone's worried about this virus. No, this is our body's adaptation for long-term, you know, challenges, because our immune systems are so torn up by the junk food we're eating. We're getting leaky, right? We're getting leaky to the point that we have a virus floating around now that shut down football games, right? That has pieces of bats on it, right? That connect to human receptors.
Right.
Think about that. You know, I'm Batman. Well, you are. If you got COVID, and you know, when someone says, I got COVID, you're Batman. I mean, really, think about it. Yeah. So you always wanted to be Batman? Yeah, go get COVID, because now we've wrecked our immune systems to the point where 10,000 years ago, a bat virus would have got on us and it'd be like, ugh, it'd be a burp. Get out of here.
Right.
You know, dog viruses, pretty soon we will. You know, luckily we've domesticated and we hang with them enough, you know.
Right.
But, you know, so the way I see things is, you know, that, you know, getting the measles is setting us up to protect us from what? Something more deadly like scarlet fever or, you know, why do we get chicken pox? So we don't get, you know, shingles later in life, you know? I mean, evolution's been around for so long. We've lived symbiotically. And for those people, that's a big $10 word for we live together and in harmony, no matter what the political parties say. We are living in harmony with our environment. And if that environment changes, like the people who love the earth and, you know, wear Birkenstocks and hug trees, I'm all for that. Save the rainforest and the, you know, the icebergs. That's great. I want you to do that. So if you love the earth so much, how come you don't, why do you hate the virus? That virus is natural.
Yeah.
It's natural. And that means it's here for a purpose. Mm-hmm. You can't just, if you love Mother Earth and you love all the effing thing. Mm-hmm. So that means you should understand what's the purpose of this virus. It's a periodic upgrade.
Yeah, that's exactly what I've come across as I looked at this, is that upgrade into the system. If you have viral DNA in your genome, how did it get there?
Yes. Right?
And why are you so darn alive? How did you make it? Like, I look at my gene pool and I think, okay, I one time wondered, you know, what is it that is special about my genome that it made it from 10, 30, 40, 50,000 years ago to today? Why was I preserved? What was my skill set? I think you and I one time were joking that I would be someone if we were warriors in a tribe years ago that would run around the flanks and throw spears. You'd walk up the center with a giant stone and just throw it at the crowd.
Exactly. Right?
And we each have our thing. And one of the things I was looking at recently, that one of the skill sets in evolutionary thought is that humans, not only people get into the opposing thumb as being such a big deal, and obviously it is, but the ability to throw and to punch is what's really unusual about humans.
Yep.
You know, throwing a spear accurately, punching, throwing a rock. I used to pitch baseball. If you said, okay, Dr. Mike, what is your best skill set athletically? There's no contest. I can throw something. I could hit you with an apple probably at 100 yards away.
Wow. Right?
To this day. Now, my arm will swell up a little bit from our
trip. Here, your rotator cuff, get some screws later.
Yeah, there's going to be a little suffering later, but I can still pull that off. And I do it once in a while. I'll grab a snowball outside and I'll hit a tree across the street a bunch of times. Think, yeah, still got it. Kind of cool. But that is something that was just a gift from God. I always could do that, you know. But then the other things athletically, I got some pretty lame things and some pretty cool things, but nothing competes to that. And I thought my ancestors must have thrown spears, rocks, at animals and neighboring tribes as part of their ability to survive. Something had to be special, you know, that was preserved to keep my genome going this long, you know?
Yeah, and probably in my line, because I look at all the lifters and strong athletes. I mean, oh, look, we got to cross this pond. I'll grab this dead tree trunk and move it over here, you know? You know, get the tree, you know? And then the rest of the tribe walks over it, right. You know? Exactly. Oh, here comes a woolly mammoth. All right, let me climb on top of this tree and drop a rock on it, you know?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, who else could get the rock up a tree but you?
Yeah, exactly. give me this 100-pound boulder, you know? So that's amazing, because a lot of people have really freaked out, and I look at the dichotomy, and there's a lot of hypocrites and dichotomy in our society right now. The same group of people that said you have to accept Biden winning did not accept Trump winning for 4 years. You have to accept this. I'm like, excuse me, for 4 years, you just skipped slamming this human being, and now you want us to accept that? And of course, I'm a card-carrying libertarian, you know, just a little warning there. So I think both groups are idiots.
Absolutely.
You know, so it's interesting watching from the middle. You talk about equilibrium. That's me.
I feel the same way. Yeah. I've told patients many times, because, you know, patients kind of get into, you know, what my political party might be.
Yeah.
And I said, if you're in love with either one of these candidates, Biden, oh, Trump, if you're in love with either one of these people, including Kamala Harris and Mike Pence, you probably should go for counseling, because these are flawed individuals that are greedy, that lie, cheat, and steal, that play the political game.
Yeah.
And in the last election, I thought, why do we have such odd choices? Where's the great people? Where's Franklin? where's Teddy Roosevelt?
Where's JFK?
Exactly. Where are these men are in society? The genome's still there. Their children's, grandchildren's, cousins and uncles are still floating around. Why don't they rise up and take office and get this country back to what it was? And I realize it's become such a horrifyingly on the take corporate-owned position.
Correct.
That no one with integrity really can stand to sit there and do what's necessary to do it. So you get weak people with strange ideas and complex ways of lying and making crazy statements. I mean, you look at Make America Great Again. That is a genius of a statement, because I might think 1975 was a good year. Someone else might think 1982. Other people might say 1950 was a good year. You know, so it's like those ink cards that you open up and you see whatever you see, right?
Everybody saw what they wanted to see in that. Genius marketing.
Yeah, great marketing, right? But at the same time, it's like, you know, what are you talking about? Make it great again. Let's go forward and make it even better than that.
Yes.
You know, it has its good things. We've done horrible things. This country hasn't done horrible things. Of course it has. We've done horrifying things in sometimes with good intentions. But we've also, in my opinion, we have the premise of this country is so great. I don't want to live anywhere else.
Yeah.
I'm part of the fiber of this country. I feel, I know I was born here, right? I mean, it makes sense to me. Freedom, individualism, rugged individualism. I mean, it's just such a great, great concept. It just gets me excited to even say, you know, I'd like to aspire to being a rugged individualist. That's what I want to be. And that's what I think I am, you know? And that's found in this country. I don't know every country, but you're not a rugged individualist in China.
I mean,
if I'm wrong, how many workers in the factory making masks can call themselves rugged individualists, right? They're robots, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I've never been there. I shouldn't say too much, but it's not a country that I am designed to live in, right? I'm designed to live in this country, and there's just so many great things about it, but I don't know what we're going to do with getting it together, but just a political rant there, because I don't like when people try to guess what party I am based on a statement, based on a virus or a scientific premise, because I don't have a party I'm in love with. I don't have a party that represents me. You say you're a card-carrying libertarian. I fully get that, because you and I are similar people. I'm a registered independent, if anybody wants to know. And that's just because I couldn't affiliate with either party years ago. I did that years ago.
Yeah.
You know, how could you destroy the environment and be okay with that? And on the other side, do everything you can for global warming. Well, all the people talking about global warming, where's their money? It's all in windmills. And so what is that? Okay, I'm going to sell global warming, and then I'm going to invest in the technology that's the opposite of that.
It is the opposite. And we don't have time to go in there, you know, killing the birds and, you know, changing migratory patterns. And if you look at, if you go down to some of the windmills, I get to drive by all that when I drive around the Midwest here. I mean, they've actually changed migratory patterns for animals that have been around for, I don't know, 100,000 years. That's really smart. I love the planet. It's great. And, you know, as long as I put on these solar panels where some of this cadmium and, you know, silicon that's in this stuff is never, ever, ever going to go away. Yeah. Are you kidding me? Get those damn things off your house. Yep. It is so artificial. Or a car battery. You know, I got an electric car. I'm saving the environment. You know, that battery is not biodegradable. And if we have a nuclear war 1,000 years from now, we'll find it and it'll still be toxic.
Yeah.
You know,
that's so sad, isn't it?
It's so sad. They love it. And I'm like, you know, someone asked me, it's like, well, Fred, how can you have a big SUV? Well, I believe in recycling. I'm recycling, you know, dinosaurs because I use gas. And ha, 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 tongue in cheek. But I said, you got that little Prius over there. Oh, it's an electric car. I'm saving the environment. Open up that battery. I can pour this gasoline on my hand, and I'm going to stink. It'll take my fingernail polish off, but I can wash it with soap and water, and I'm good. Open up that battery. Let's pour it on your hand and wait.
Good point.
Tell me how natural that is.
Yeah, that's a really good point. One of the things I don't get with windmills is that obviously these blades are churning and they're knocking up, they're killing birds and changing patterns. This sounds too simple, and I'm sure there's a reason, but it just popped in my head. Why isn't there a screen, like a fan in my house? When I was a kid, you always wanted to touch the plastic fan.
You never put your nose up to it, did you?
What's that?
Did you put your nose up to it and talk into it?
Absolutely. I used to put a paper clip on it, a pencil, the letter opener. I was a horrifyingly curious child, believe me. I don't know how I survived my childhood. But there's a screen there so you don't get hit by the blade. We do that for humans. Can't do that for birds.
Well, birds aren't worth it, or either old people, because like with COVID-19, we're leaving all the old people in nursing homes and letting them die. It's like a big petri dish. We don't care about great-grandma and grandma. I mean, if you really care about them, pull them the hell out and take them home.
Yeah.
Because your house is much safer than an environment with a strong virus and unhealthy people.
Yeah, think of the still air and the stagnant immune systems sitting in that place. The air quality with the cleaning products. Think of the lung tissue that's being stung by the multiple bleachings and God knows what cleaning supply they're recommending to attenuate and degrade this virus when it's on the surface, right? I mean, nuclear weapons to kill something that soap kills.
Yeah.
And the air quality, I was in a nursing home with my grandmother, seeing her before she passed years ago. And the air, I'm a very sensitive to air quality because of history of asthma and stuff. And I got in there and it's just, my lungs just like shut. I think, God, I'm breathing hot, stale, putrid air. I mean, obviously there's this fecal material and vomit and blood and it, you know, and I understand that, but you can't pop a window. Has anyone ever heard of an air exchanger? I mean, let's get some technology going here. You lose a little heat with an air exchanger.
Air filters. They're $300 at the hardware store. Get one. You know?
With that. But an air exchanger has that, you know, pipes going different directions, right? You share the heat, but you don't share the air.
Yeah.
Turn that sucker on and let these people have some real air from outside. Some healthy viruses, some healthy bacteria blown around in the garden maybe they have outside. But, you know, they're boxed up, and it's 1950s style concepts.
Yes.
You know, the science moves on, and you can't apply the science? Come on. We're better than that.
And I don't understand that. I mean, you want to protect them. You're worried about it. Like in Minnesota, 75% of all the deaths are those over 65. So we know that stat. Yeah. Zero deaths of teenagers. Okay, then why are we boxing up the teenagers and leaving the old people all around to get sicker and sicker and sicker? It's almost like they don't want to admit that we have a flexible, dynamic body that can get weaker or stronger depending on our choices.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
I think what's fascinating to me is in the very beginning, we didn't know much and there was a lot of panic. And then within 3 to 4 months, we've learned a lot. And then by now, we've learned a heck of a lot about transmission and viruses and where the vectors are. And I know you love the gym. I love the gym. So we're real sensitive to the idea of gyms being closed. But outside of that, you know, my daughter is in high school, and they decided they would have a hybrid idea. So some are home. Sometimes you're home, sometimes there. Or you can go fully remote. You had a choice. She decided to go hybrid at first. So she went in 2 days a week. They had one-way hallways, constant mask wearing, teachers in a mask, students are in masks. You're not allowed to take your mask off for any reason. Now, they had a mask break at some point, but she tried to take an extra class this year and skip her lunch. So she tried to sneak in a granola bar by opening up her mask towards the end of a class, and the teacher went into a freak, right? So I thought to myself, okay, you have plastic dividers, polycarbonate dividers around each chair. He has a mask on. The teacher has a mask on, right? This high school, I think they graduate 500 people in the class, something like that, maybe 400 every year. So there's that many students, you know, times four. And the polycarbonate costs $900,000.
What the F?
$900,000 of polycarbonate. It's like 4 feet high, 3 feet wide. It basically goes around three areas of the desk, right?
Okay.
With a mask on behind there. For children who, as you just repeated, are not dying from this virus, right? Now, I get it. The teacher might be at high risk. My idea for that was, you're high risk, severance package.
You're done.
Because chances are you're close anyway. If you're 60 and you're obese and you have diabetes and you have...
And high blood pressure.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, and you're on an ACE inhibitor.
Yeah.
Let's give you a severance package right now. You get to go. You're done. You're retired. Here you go. Think how cheap that would be relative to $900,000. Just that one thing, let alone the constant scrubbing of the school, right? They took a Wednesday to clean the whole school.
Oh my God.
They my daughter went in Monday and Thursday. Other kids went Tuesday and Friday.
Well, and it makes no sense. It's like, you know, well, you know, the teachers, you can't single out the teachers. So you're going to allow this virus to continue on, shut down our economy when, like with SARS, we didn't do that. And labs, some people died. And I'm sure some people died and they never checked for SARS. Ooh, right. Got the flu, right?
Sure.
So the SARS number, people said, well, only 100 people died of SARS. You know, we have thousands and tens of thousands dying. I said, there was more than that. I said, we just didn't know how to test for it. Someone would come into a little local hospital, they do flu. Oh, yeah, he's got flu and SARS, but they never checked for SARS and they died of flu. Or there's grandma at 85. And here's something to consider, too, that drives me crazy because it's just fact. We have all these elderly people dying. How many of them have DNRs?
Right.
The majority.
I was going to say probably 99%.
Yeah. So you're even ready for this? You got people who are getting this cold and we're not allowed to what? Treat them.
Yeah.
Think about it. Dude, and in Minnesota, you know, we don't check for flu anymore, right? We're not even checking for it. So people, like I had a nurse come in to me, been in ICU for 20, 30 years. So she's an expert. She's smarter than the ER, young ER docs that come in, the rookies. So, you know, I'm like, hey, Mary, you know, how you doing? She's like, Fred, you know, I listened to some of your podcasts and stuff, but yesterday I had a 30-year-old in the ER. Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, with COVID and he's going to die. And I'm like, that's terrible. And I said, so how do you know he had COVID? Wow, we checked. What were his symptoms? Can you share that? Well, he had infiltrate really heavy in one lung, not bilaterally, one, okay. High fever, yeah, like 102. Well, you know, COVID's like 100, 101, but keep going. Sweaty, achy joints, kidney issues, he's blowing off protein. What did you call that 2 years ago, Mary? H1N1. Mm-hmm. Did you check for H1N1? Well, we don't check for that because it was COVID. So you're saying, Mary, you stopped after you looked for COVID.
Yeah.
You know what I used to tell the interns, Mike, that, you know, I probably trained over 100 interns from the school. And then I had to stop because couldn't take it anymore. Man, some idiots. The snowflakes and the kids that live at home at age 22 were driving me nuts. You know, you can imagine me trying to deal with some of those kids.
Well, age of maturity just keeps going up.
Yeah, know, exactly. Kind of... You got to wait till they're 45 before they're like – 18-year-olds from our generation and probably go back to the great generation, 16-year-olds, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I've heard those numbers. But yeah, I've heard that before. I've had patients tell me, oh, this virus isn't like anything we've ever seen. I'm like, no, it's a lot like what we've seen. It's a little different. And they're like, oh, you think so? I'm like, yeah. I said, so what have you seen? You know, and they're like, well, I don't, my mom had the flu and I have had the flu. I'm like, okay, but when have you hyper studied a flu and you know how it moves, what it does, the different symptomatology and the oddities like COVID toes and the stuff they come up with? I said, he's, you know, obviously he's like never. Okay. But I know three people that died from this. I never knew anyone that died from the flu. I'm like, really? Okay. So you don't know anyone's grandmother who died of pneumonia, right? Of a spiked fever. I started naming the things that, you know, people die of that are flu-like,
yeah.
You know, and they'll say it's blood clots. They'll call it different things. I said dehydration.
Dehydration.
Well, what did they have? Well, they had the flu, but they died of dehydration. Well, they died of the flu they died of dehydration. We're not doing that right now. Everything is about calling it COVID, you know, and people are dying of COVID. And they are, but they've also died of the flu in the past too, right?
Yeah.
And this is more contagious. Like I say, I don't want to downplay it and getting everyone all heated up that I'm making this thing sound like it's nothing. It's obviously something, but we should be doing smart things instead of paranoid, fear-based, drug-based things. Like I still am shocked that in month three, that when you got a COVID test, you didn't get a bottle of vitamin D for free by the government.
I think they're doing research. That in England now.
Okay, yeah, they are. I just read an article. Well, yeah. What, 8 months a little late?
Yeah.
Better late than never. But why would it take so long when there's 30 years of research on vitamin D? I listened to on Mercola.com, Joseph Mercola's podcast, or his website one time, it's a YouTube video of two researchers that researched vitamin D for 30 years. It was about 2 years ago I listened to it. It was 2 hours long, husband and wife researchers. And it was absolutely amazing what vitamin D does. The list is so exhausting. I couldn't bore you with like naming almost every symptom on the planet when you're vitamin D deficient, all the things you can have. And then I backed up and think, God, why is it so important? I'm thinking, well, the sun is the universal source of energy to the earth. If that doesn't get on you, you get sick. If you don't get that on a plant, the plant dies. Okay. Now we don't photosynthesize, right? But we decided that the sun was causing skin cancer in the 1980s and being white, being super pale was the virtue toss of the 80s, right? I don't go in the sun. I'm preventing my skin cancer. And I want to be responsible.
Or wrinkles. Wrinkles are bad.
Yeah, there's that too. Photo aging. And I saw a study years ago that the people in Florida had a slight uptick in skin cancer, but a massive downturn in every other form of cancer.
Yep.
Why? Well, they were in the sun. Okay, so responsible sun. Yeah, I wasn't born at the equator. Right? My SPF on my skin naturally is probably like a 10.
You're darker than me. I mean, come on.
Yeah, well, yeah, the Italian and Greek in me. But if you were born near the equator, let's take Africa, for example, if you have super dark skin, you have about a 30 SPF, I believe. So how much sun do you need if you live in Minnesota, if you're African-American, or in Buffalo? Well, you need every ounce of sun you could possibly get because your skin is designed to deal with the equator sun. And you're way up at the top of the planet now, getting a runoff in June, and then the Earth tips, and we start losing the ability that UV to make it through the thicker atmosphere at an angle, and you can't make your vitamin D like you used to. And then I'm thinking, how did the Eskimos deal with it? Right? Do you know that one?
Fill me in.
It's in the fish. So you're always getting vitamin D as a human being, right?
Yeah.
So it's dark, you know, for 23 hours sometimes, I believe, in Alaska. So what do you do with your body? Make the vitamin D. Well, first, your pal is all get out. Secondly, you're getting fish and getting your vitamin D. And then when the earth is, when the season changed, you got 23 hours of light or whatever it is, and a little dark. So you're getting really a lot of sun, right? So you're getting massive amounts of vitamin D one part of the season. In the season where it's dark, you're eating fish. And you're getting vitamin D from the fish, right? So you need vitamin D, people, and you need to get in the sun. Because is it logical that the only thing you get from the sun is vitamin D? You know how many compounds? There's another thing for us to look up. We're not going to bed tonight. How many different things have proven to come from sun exposure, your skin being exposed to the sun? Maybe you know something about that. I don't. I know that it's vitamin D, and after that, I'm not sure. But there's got to be... I don't know. I would guess hundreds of compounds that are made from the sun. And, you know, we historically have avoided it. right? Because we're afraid to get a burn or whatever, you know?
I'm going to throw this in real quick. Just, you know, there are hundreds of compounds, but something that we know is historical, the more you're out of the sunshine or exposed to the environment, the higher your cortisol levels and catecholamines, adrenaline, your stress hormones. So you get more fear and anxiety by hiding.
That's great.
Imagine that, what they're doing to us now. So, you know, I understand there's a political divide now. I don't know how a virus became political. You know, we'll figure that out over the next few years when this all unpacks. But the interesting thing to me, if you wanted a self-fulfilling prophecy, you would, how would you lower people's immune systems? Take the strongest immune systems out of the population, hide them, then tell people that antigens are bad for your immune system. Don't get exposed to other people, right? And then hide. Hey, we're going to lock down. We work from home, inside your house. You're not even getting the sunlight crossing the parking lot to go into the building anymore.
Yep.
So now their immune systems are lower. So when this cold bug, this coronavirus comes around for its third wave, its third surge, all C viruses do three peaks a year. It's nothing new, New York Times. Grow up, read a book. So when it's coming for that third peak, guess what? You're going to get sick. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Right. You know, I don't know why my wife left me. I don't know. You spent all the mortgage money and you called her the C word. There may be a reason, you know?
Right.
You know, I got so sick from it because you've been inside for 6, 8, going on a year now. Mm-hmm. What is it going to do to our society? Not less what it's going to do for my kids. Now, I take Thursdays off. So in the summer, even during COVID times, we went over to Wisconsin. We went to parks. I gathered the troops. We went and did something. Yeah. I forced them into the gyms when the gyms were open. We went for walks. The friends who were allowed out, they came over, were constantly trying to expose themselves, trying to get around people, around the environment, drink from the garden hose. But I can already tell that psychologically they're getting weaker and their immune systems have to be getting weaker.
After the isolation, I mean, how communal are human beings?
Yeah.
There's a few exceptions of, you know, people that are outside the spectrum of human interaction. They live in a mountain cabin and don't like people. But I mean, those are oddities. That isn't the core of humanity. The core of humanity is social or group, you know, group dynamics or wolf packs, right? So if you're not going to be able to do that, you know, you're breaking people down. And you wonder why there's conspiracy theories being tossed around that are so dark and horrifying. People's minds get to wander because you're like, why would you do it this way? What are you gaining? And you look at, where's the money going? Follow the money on this thing. And you start getting really bizarre because you're like, are we this idiotic or is this a plan to somehow, you know, take over and, you know, be more tyrannical? I mean, that's a whole other topic that I don't pretend to be an expert in. And I don't even like to entertain that kind of darkness. But don't wonder why the conspiracy theorists are all fired up right now, right? They're those kind of people. They have these kind of tyrannical antennas. They always believe, you know, the alien stuff and everything else.
Didn't land on the moon.
Yeah. Well, they've been less wrong lately, right?
How about
all those preppers in their house, right?
Yes.
All the preppers are like, yeah, this is exactly what I was talking about, and everyone laughed in my face.
Oh yeah. I have a doctor, and if I say his name, you'll know him, but he's a good friend of mine and he's a prepper and he has a bomb shelter and all that. And when we ran out of toilet paper in the spring, I called him and said, do I have to drive down to New Ulm to get some? He goes, you can, but you better not first.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it got pretty ugly there for a while. And hopefully we're coming out of that, right? But I mean, I don't know. So any predictions on where this is going?
Well, you know, I predicted the election correctly and all the problems with the mail-in ballots. I correctly predicted Trump, that it would be pretty much a knockout. This one's a little dark because here's the thing. We don't know what this mRNA virus is going to do. So I hate to say it. They're going to get it out there on the market and we'll probably have side effects from it years from now.
Yeah.
For a coronavirus. So I'm more worried about that. But I think they've effectively done three things. One, they've effectively taken away some of our individualism, because if you're someone who reads science, questions the doctor and say, no, I read science. I am just as educated as this doctor. Mm-hmm. End of story. I'm just as educated. And so, you know, so they're basically pulling away personal autonomy, right?
Yeah.
You know, and saying, we know best how to take care of your family and your kids.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's a big deal for me. That's a hot button. Don't tell me how to raise four teenage daughters. Don't do it. I'm doing a good job. Exactly. And so they're telling us that they know better. And three, controlling businesses, small businesses, whatever, you know, saying, you know what, if you jump through the hoops, right, we will allow you to open.
Yeah.
Dangerous. So that's kind of scary. I'm not happy about the direction it's going. We're becoming dumber. And I mean, really, lack of intelligence with science and math as a society. And it's pretty sad. I was at a store when we could be open, and gave cash. And the poor lady, and then like a 21-year-old was saying, trying to figure out, you know, the change should be, you know, $15.05. So I handed her a 20 and I had a nickel in my pocket, had some change, which is rare, you know, but I just cleaned out my car. So wait a minute, I got a nickel. I just cleaned, hey, there's 20 and nickel. Clueless what to do. She could give me the change for the 20 because the computer told her what to do. And I'm like, oh, no, I don't want all that. Just give me the bill. She didn't know which bill to pull out. Give me a 5, young lady. But this says to give you this. Well, I'm giving you 20.05. You don't have to give me all that change. I don't want it.
Yeah.
You know, so our math skills have gone completely down. Our understanding of our bodies have gone down. Mm-hmm. So we've lost that individuality of being an American. That, you know, let me build a better windshield wiper, right? Let me build a better tire. Let me build a better fan. Everyone says, well, Fred, you know, after the lockdown, we came back to the gym, we moved our equipment back, and they're like, Fred, you're in better shape now than you've been in years. And last time we saw you, you had 6 screws in your shoulder, and now you're bench pressing in the hundreds again. I'm like, yeah, it was all the rest. And then I would tell them, well, we moved our equipment to a friend's basement. I won't give his name because we don't want to be arresting, fined, because it is a fine here, and 90 days in jail.
Oh, yeah.
So we had 15 of us down there, and people were arguing, well, you know, you're not doing one household. I mean, sometimes on busy weeks, you know, I see my powerlifting team more than I do my girls, you know? Sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm with them 6 to 8 hours every week, breathing on them, sweating on them. They're pulling my shirt off. When I'm stuck like a turtle on the bench and can't get up, you know, they're touching, you know, we're sharing the same germs, the same viruses, same sweat, the same DNA. So it is, you know, one household biome, you know. So, and then my friend moved, he moved to Blaine. So we got it in U-Haul and moved all the way across town. And then when the gym's open, we moved it back. Guess what we did 2 weeks ago? Gym's closed again in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Got the equipment, moved it back to his basement. And I went across the border to Wisconsin. I joined a gym there. It's about 35-40 minute drive. I'll go there once a week because they're all open and they don't wear masks and all that crazy stuff. And, you know, I'll go to their house. Now in Minnesota, we, you know, all healthcare providers have to be masked and take all the precautions and all that stuff. But the interesting thing is, you know, when we came back, I was in shape and I'm like, I'm going to try one more run at this, you know. And we went to South Dakota to find a meet to qualify for Worlds. And no masks. The guy, you know, who was running the meet says, yep, we got to do some hygiene measures. Here, put a big bucket of alcohol down. Boom. Here's your alcohol. If you want to use it, fine. If you don't, fine. That's our measure. you went to restaurants and the waiters and waitresses, the staff had a mask on, and the cook may, but you know what? Their numbers were fine. It was all fine. And people are like, well, if you go to South Dakota, it's terrible now. It's flu season. They're not checking past COVID, because if they get a COVID, they get federal money, thousands of dollars for saying COVID. Fred, you would not say that they're money driven. I don't know. If I made 25, if I was an ER doctor or an infectious disease doctor working in a hospital, a hospitalist, if I was a hospitalist and if I made 15 to 20% on top of a certain amount, because this is what their contracts say, of my salary, I'm making a $150,000, $200,000 a year. But if I get, you know, generate $3 million in services, I get an extra 10% of that. What's your motivation going to be? COVID. Oh, you got hit by a car. Nope. COVID. Yep. Gunshot room. COVID, you know? Yep.
That's what we're seeing.
And that's what we're seeing. Yep. So, and people say, Fred, they won't be like that. And I'm like, okay, let me tell you two stories that are, I know. There's Dr. Don Fowle in Wisconsin, had a family member, he's from Denver, get COVID. Told him to stay home. He was so wiped out by COVID, he decided to redo the engine and transmission in his muscle car. So he went out, said, hey, I got 2 weeks off. I'm working. I just got a little raspy throat. He got up underneath the car. Unfortunately, the car, the engine block fell on his chest. Mm-hmm. Went to the hospital, crushed internal injuries, died 1 week later because of the damage to the heart and lungs and all the broken bones. On the death certificate, they put COVID-19.
Yeah.
I kid you not. His wife was beside himself. It's not COVID. It was an accident. And of course, can you imagine using the bereavement as a lever to control and manipulate? That's horrible. That's dark. Mm-hmm. So they fought that and they're still fighting it. And that was 6 months ago. Okay. Because they got federal money for a week while he was in the hospital every day for COVID-19 diagnosis. The next one I know is a group of patients. I've been treating this family for over 20 years. Her dad, Michelle's dad, died in Florida. He had cancer. He had all these other problems. He was in there for that. He happened to catch COVID in the hospital. Mm-hmm. They now reassigned him to the COVID floor. He's just dying hospice. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't allow more than one person a day to go see him because he's on the COVID floor now.
Yeah.
And on the death certificate, they wanted to put COVID. He says, no, he died of cancer. He died of this. That's why he was in there for it. She had to go through four doctors before the doctor would sign off. It was really, you know, the primary was, you know, lung cancer that killed him. Can you believe that? It's horrible.
I have a couple stories like that, but the quickest one, patients is 48 years old, smoked 3 to 4 packs a day.
Okay.
On oxygen, multiple episodes of becoming so, you know, pulse oxes in the low 80s and stuff like that. And he gets cyanotic, they race him to the hospital. Over 2 years, that was going on in his life. He came in, got treated with oxygen. He finally quit smoking too little too late. Then he, during this mid-pandemic, probably June, he has another episode exactly like he always has. They race him in. He's cyanotic, pulse ox is horrifying, half conscious. They put him in the hospital, and this hospital they put him in was one that had a lot of COVID patients.
Okay.
So it became this thing where you just get marked COVID positive when you're brought in the hospital. They didn't test him.
What?
His parents had passed away years ago. He had one good friend that was another one of my patients. They said, he swears they never tested him. The one nurse said, no, we basically just consider you COVID positive when you come in this hospital because the chances are you're going to get it because you're here. Okay, well, he didn't like that. Well, then this guy dies. The patient dies.
Yeah.
Well, what does he die of? He died of COVID somehow, right? Now, he has a history of serious lung problems. Mm-hmm. Now, he died with COVID. Well, that isn't even necessarily true because there isn't a test to prove it. Did they test him possibly and there's no record of it? Maybe. But he didn't have COVID going in. He had the exact same scenario he always had. So the chance of him having COVID is very, very, very low and unlikely. But there's a perfect example where you make a little more money checking the box. The box got checked. They buried him. No one fought for anything. And that's another stat of a COVID death. All right. And that's somebody I know. It's a patient of mine. And how many people do I know? Multiply that across the entire country. Mm-hmm. And this 250,000 number or whatever it is now doesn't make as much sense.
I have a training partner. So it's one of the 15 who he's, I don't want to say he's COVID scared. If he's listening to this, I love you, Amir. But he's just careful, you know? Yeah. So he's masked all the way through training, and that's fine. I don't care what people want to do with their personal health. I'll just, you know, give them science and see what happens. He gives me the best liftoffs anyway. So, you know, anyway, he went and he got tested and he was positive in the morning. Now he's an engineer, he's a smart man, PhD, the whole thing. He went in the afternoon, got another test because he's probably listened to me, right? Guess what? Negative.
Sure.
Guess where that first positive test went into? The positive case mark. And he's negative. But he's negative because he had two tests. That first one went into the stats for the state of Minnesota for how many positive cases we had that day.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Yeah. It's just,
and you can't call them and say, you need to take that out. No, it just gets shipped off. It's on the Excel spreadsheet, done. There ain't going back.
Yeah.
So, this whole pandemic's been crazy. Oh, my goodness. We could go on forever. We're going to have to do this over. This may turn into a thing.
Sure. I'd be happy to hang with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. So as we finish up here, Mike, we covered, you know, the state of alternative health, natural childbirth, chiropractic, the politics of this pandemic. If you had like a minute or two to talk to the audience about taking care of yourself and fighting through this, what would it be?
I always try to get people like you do back to the fundamentals. Like you were saying about, I think, 3 liters of water and 100 grams of protein. For me, it's massive the fundamentals. And what are those? Movement, water intake, and your thoughts.
Oh,
right. Work on what are you focusing on? The power of focus, right? You and I have been through so many different books, especially when we're in school and we're thinking, okay, we want to be successful. Let's be the ultimate doctor. So we read Wayne Dyer. We read Tony Robbins. We got into Zig Ziglar and some of these other guys.
Cosmandito.
That's right. Yeah. Rich man, poor man, and
the greatest salesman in the world.
The books. Yeah. Great books. But in there, I always think to myself, you know, how much time are you going to spend thinking about the problem and how much time are you going to spend thinking about the solution?
Okay.
Right. And when you call something a problem, remember we trained ourselves for a while there and I slipped back and forth with this is getting rid of that word and calling it a challenge. Because when you have a challenge, it sounds interesting and it gives you energy. When you have a problem, you're like, oh God, a problem. And when you say problem, you're making it, you're believing that that is bigger than you. One of the examples I said, if you have snow on the tip of your boot and you think, oh my God, I got snow. Is that a problem? Well, if you can slap your foot on the floor and knock the snow off, it's not a problem. If you're in a wheelchair paralyzed and you got snow on the top of your shoe, now it's a problem. That snow is bigger than your ability to knock it off, right? So most of the time, the things you're calling problems are really just in my mind, God's way of saying, you know what? I'm gonna try to make you bigger right now. I'm gonna give you something. Here, try this. For your own growth, for your own spiritual development, I'm gonna give you this situation. And I'm gonna see what you do with it. You're gonna cower in the corner, or you're gonna get up like a man, and you're gonna say, you know what? This is a challenge I'm ready for. I'm gonna stand up, take a breath, consider my options, keep my emotions in check, think with my logical brain, and go after that thing and get it, right? So take challenges on is probably the number one. But then you can't just live in inside your mind. Very powerful, obviously. The nervous system runs every cell. So that's stage one. But then you really have to say, I'm going to live close to nature. And what's more natural than the sun, like we talked about, and water and motion? So when I'm outside, I try to wear the least amount of clothing possible if the weather permits it to get the most sun on my body as possible, right? To a degree, I can burn, right? So I don't want to burn. So I'll cover up t-shirts and hats and whatever. But to me, you got to move this body because one of my favorites from a long time ago was Jack LaLanne, right?
Yeah.
Just a crazy dude, right? 20-minute fingertip planks over his head. I think he set a chin-up record and a push-up record. He one time said something like that I tell all my patients is you have two hearts, the one you know about in your chest, right? The second heart that beats is muscle contraction and deep breathing. How do you move your lymphatic system? You know the answer to this.
Muscle contraction, deep
breath, and bouncing off the earth, right? So when you're running, big time moving your lymphatic system. If you can't run or you don't want to run or it's not recommended for your body mass, I remember going for a 3-mile run with you one time. One of the funniest stories of my life. Remember that when you dated that girl who was a runner?
Oh my God.
For a run. And I showed up late to the event and you said, where the heck were you? I'm like, I was brushing up on CPR. I want to make sure I can bring you back. You ran 3 miles. Last time you ran, I don't know, what year was it? So, anyway, that was funny. Remember you run around Lake Normandale?
Yeah, did I die? I can't remember. I probably had blocked it out psychologically.
You were in so much pain, man. You were in so much pain. I was running backwards in front of you going, you can do it, man. Just breathe. Slow it down. Of course, you wouldn't slow down because you're trying to keep up with her. She's trotting next to you like going, all right, Fred, I think you're going to be fine. She's not even winded. I'm running backwards because I was much more of a runner than you. I'm running backwards going, yeah, you can do it. And then you threw yourself on the lawn when we got, but I think it's around 3 miles around Normandale, a little less maybe. And then you just threw yourself on the ground. I'm thinking, there's the champion that I know of. This man just put himself in more pain than anyone I've ever seen in a running event.
Marathon Division One. She was the University of Minnesota 10,000 runner. She was the Division One champ or whatever.
Probably. She was a little cute little thing that could just run. She looked like a road runner, you know? anyway, so for me, you know, motion. You have to respect the idea that we're meant to move. We're beasts, right? We're living in captivity, right? And things live longer in captivity. Well, you can split the difference here and get outside. My dad was a big 300-pound dude. One time he's on the couch and the movie's about to start. And I told him I'd watch the movie with him. And I was putting my sneakers on to go for a run when I lived at home. I think I was in first year of college maybe. And he said, where are you going? The movie starts. I'm like, Dad, I've seen the beginning of this. I didn't see the middle and the end. I'll catch up with you. He goes, well, where are you going? I'm going to go for a run. He goes, come on, you're going to go out there and you're going to get hit by a bus. I go, and I'm going to be here on a couch enjoying these pepperoni and watching the rest of the movie, right? You're going to be a pancake out there. My dad was not Jack LaLanne, right? My dad was not someone who promoted exercise. He was an extremely comedic individual. And I said, yeah, Dad, I'll be fine. I got to stay in shape. He's like, you're in shape. You're a flat-bellied freak. That's what you are. You got to have a little something there. What the heck's going on? You don't even have a stomach. So went for the run, came back, watched a movie with him. You know, everything was fine. But I thought, you go outside. There is a chance you get hit by a bus. Yep. Lightning. Dog bites. I mean, but is living in captivity worth it? And I mean that in a global sense. How much captivity are you living in? How much safety do you want?
Oh, wow.
But listen to Helen Keller. What did she talk about with security? Yeah. Right. She had some really cool quotes about how it's a trap and how it's too much security and you die. Why? You're not.
Didn't she say that everyone dies, but not everyone lives?
It might have been her. That's a good one. I've heard that. Yeah. I mean, it's when you save a life, you really just delay a death.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, we're all going to go, but how do you want to live? You want to live an exciting life out there doing some interesting things? To what degree? You know, I climb in the Rockies. I don't rock climb. I haven't parachuted. I haven't gone skydiving. There are things that seem like they're a little risky or a little bit beyond my adrenal level. I could be talked into skydiving, I'm sure. No one's done it yet.
I know you'll go.
One of my daughters will. Oh, yeah, you and I should go skydiving. I got to watch you jump out first, though, just to see that body coming down. That's got to be funny. Remember when skiing, you had that green outfit on? Do you remember that?
Oh, God.
I'm on the chairlift. You're coming down the hill. I kind of lost you for a while because I'd skied for years, and we were a couple of people. And I'm like, I have to catch up with Fred before cell phones. I wonder where Fred is. And all of a sudden, I looked to the side. I'm like, well, there he is. I see this green, monstrous body flying down the hill at some breakneck speed. And I'm thinking, what's he doing on this hill? No one taught him how to stop yet.
No one taught me how to stop. Go in the Black Diamond, Fred. It's fine. Yeah, and then I'm coming down halfway, and I thought, well, you taught me how to stay up and balance and go side to side, but no one showed me stop.
Yeah, right. Right.
So I looked for the smallest, softest people to hit. I thought that was the thing.
I think you took out a couple of Volkswagens in a parking lot, if I remember right. You had to put them back on their wheels after you hit them. But so to me, in summary, we have to pay respect to nature, look at the trends, study our ancestors. What's this body meant to do? You know, people say, what's a good chair? I'm like, there's no such thing. There's no chairs in nature. Go in the forest, try to find yourself a comfortable chair. The ants will start biting you if you sit.
Hey, right, because you're not supposed to be there.
There's no sitting in there. There's squatting, there's running, there's standing, there's jumping, there's trotting, there's hiking. there's climbing, there's a lot of things. Leaning, right? That's nice. Yeah. Captain Morgan stand, you know, with the one leg up, those are all great. There's no chairs, right? So I tell people, get a standing desk, an exercise ball, get a walking treadmill, mount a piece of plywood on the top of that, throw your laptop up there, walk real slow. You know, we're meant to move 12 hours a day from what anthropologists tell us. And if we get an hour three times a week in the gym, we're expecting a round of applause, right? Sitting, what is that? Remember the book, Sitting is the New Smoking?
Yeah.
15 years? I was shocked to hear that. I didn't even think it was that bad, right? Colon cancer from constant pressure, right? Bleaching that blood supply out, causing anoxia, intermittent oxygen deprivation, and the cost of that.
Yeah.
So breath, right? Water, breath, motion, living closer to nature, right? So close. I mean, I'm putting out a video series sometime. I'll let you know about it. It's almost done. And it's 28 days to optimum health. And each video is about 6 minutes long. And it's just something you watch in the morning, 6 minutes. And one of them is on grounding. Because I thought that was interesting. And I thought it was kind of a hippie thing, walking barefoot. I grew up in a city, so we never walked barefoot. It was like this
grass. You wouldn't dare. You only walk barefoot when your shoes were stolen.
Exactly, right. That's it. That's the only time. You're walking barefoot shamefully home going, yeah, I lost my shoes. I'm an idiot. Can't believe that guy got me. But so when I learned about walking barefoot and the fact that we hold a static electricity and we release those ions or ionic charges into the ground and that's natural, I thought that's interesting because even the original shoes were leather and they got wet and they conducted into the ground. Then we got these really good rubbers and we no longer touch the ground to any degree. I'm in a house right now on the second floor. I can't ground here, right? So I bought a grounding sheet that I sleep on occasionally and a grounding wrist guard. Pretty cool stuff, right? So once again, another touch into nature, grounding the body, right? So keep looking for things that mimic the outdoors and get outdoors, obviously. But when you can't, when it's minus 40 and White Bear or wherever you're hiding out there, So yeah, that would be my summary.
Thank you.
You know?
Well, thanks, Mike. Oh my God, this is going to take a while to unpack. This has been amazing. And thank you for being on the show.
Absolutely, Fred. My pleasure.